then give the department a green light as to whether they've performed or not. Matters for the members to consider during this interaction that we'll have in the coming days would be, for instance, whether the report includes all relevant content, whether the information is communicated in a simple and clear manner. And I can talk to that a bit. For instance, if you, well, I know in the former communications portfolio, we had about 7 entities reporting to us. And with the department, but you'd find the manner in which the annual reports are presented is not consistent, as if they're coming from different departments. And it's one department. So it's some of the issues that you'd want to clarify on. And whether there's also sufficient information provided by the department and the entities reporting to it in terms of the complex matters that they embark on. Whether the report is original in terms of cut and paste, where do they take information from the previous year and just paste it on the new financial year? It could happen. But you also want to check whether the objectives are measurable and whether the service delivery information is consistent with the mandate of the department. And, of course, management has to demonstrate a commitment to address concerns raised by the oversight bodies, including ourselves. So if members do raise questions to the departments or request documentation not received, that could formulate somewhat a problem or a challenge in how the committee does its oversight. The other important aspect is around issues of resources, whether human resources or financial resources, but it's important to always measure what was allocated to the department in comparison to the deliverables that they have to deliver on. I'm going to touch a bit on the issue I was talking about around Section 32, around the issues of governance, that it is actually a reflection of the department and its entities to commit to maintain the highest standards of governance. And, of course, these are just fundamental prescripts of management of public funds. And also, the public must be assured that the department has good governance structures in place to effectively, efficiently, and economically utilize state resources for the benefit of the public. And we can go deeper around the governance information, but I thought perhaps I will just highlight just two aspects of it, and that is the one issue around risk management as well as the issues around internal audit, which I'll go a little bit deeper on further. And I also want to say that, you know, in terms of the how the National Treasurer has actually improved the monitoring system, it's become quite more complex, and it's been evolving over the years to such an extent that it's not always rigid in how they, you know, put systems in place to ensure that there's relevant tools to monitor how the public funds are controlled. One of them, a key one, is the issue around the internal controls as well as the internal audit, which would ensure that, you know, there's the key activities of the department and the objectives are carried out appropriately. And, of course, there needs to be an audit committee as well as the audit committee report, which should be submitted with the annual financial statements. Around risk management, I just thought that I'd highlight a few things that it's an established framework of the PFMA, and that it's prudent for risk management to achieve its objectives. Management responsibilities for risk ownership and management. Risk must be assessed on a regular basis. Risk management plans must be regularly assessed. And that internal audit is needed to assess the key risks facing the department. responsibility of the internal audit and the AG is to provide the independent assurance of on the effectiveness of risk management. And of course, the annual reports must disclose any risk management arrangements that are there. In terms of the internal audit, the executive should ensure that the department has an effective and independent audit committee. The audit committee members should be suitably skilled and experienced, independent, and non-executive directors. The audit committee should be chaired by an independent and non-executive director. The audit committee should oversee the integrated reporting. The audit committee should ensure that that a combined assurance model is applied to provide coordinated approach to all assurance activities. Of course, in terms of the reports, which Parliament should also have should be privy to, these are the various issues that you look at when you get the report. For instance, you look at the attendance of the committee meetings of that audit committee. You look at the effectiveness of internal controls, the effectiveness of the internal audit function as a unit itself in the department, and so on. I'll go, because of the time constraints, I'll go directly to the department. I think I just wanted to cover that overview as just a conceptual approach to how we'll go about in the coming days. The department's allocation in terms of the current financial or the 2015-2016 financial year, as you can see, was just above 1.2 billion. Yes, 1.3 billion. And the actual expenditure of it was about I was just below 1.2 billion. Yeah, it was just below 1.2 billion. So it's a minimal under expenditure from the department in that instance. So, and as we know, that it is quite a new department. I think this is the first annual report that they've tabled to the committee. In terms of their quarterly expenditures, it's safe to say that they have been adhering to the 25% quarterly expenditures set by the National Treasurer. When you look at expenditure versus appropriation per program, you will notice that also in terms of that, not much can be read into it, in that they have been spending quite well. If you look at the first quarter, this is the administration, sorry. The administration was allocated about 48 million, and they spent just below 48. They were given about 48.2, and they spent just below 48. Somewhere there. I can't see properly. Yeah, and I think the essence is that the administration was spending quite well with just the minimal amount that was not spent. And same with the communications policy and research and development unit or program, rather. They spent just below 5 million. Is it 5 million? Yes. And whereas they were allocated just above 7 million. For the industry and capacity development, they spent just below 20 million, whereas they allocated 20.8 million. Entity oversight, of course, was allocated 1.2 billion, 1.214 billion, and it spent just almost about that amount. When you look at the variance in expenditure trends, you will notice that it's the entity oversight actually has the most allocation of the budget of the department, And of course, as rightfully so, that's why you see it as high. But in terms of the expenditure of the department, you will notice that it was spent quite well for the purpose. We also looked at GCIS in terms of the allocation. And when we compare the GCIS in terms of the allocation for 2014-15 year and the 2015-16 year, you'll notice that there was a huge cut in their budget. Needless to say that it's probably one of the most efficient entities that or a department that reports to the committee, in that with the little budgets that they've been allocated, they've been able to perform outstandingly in relation to their mandate. And of course, as you'd imagine, the budget constraints are a challenge for them, but they have been managing quite well in that. And this particular slide is just also showing in terms of how they spend their money, and you'll notice that the administration is the one that has the most allocation in the budget of the department. But it's safe to say that we just wanted to give an overview, but the actual details are almost always contained in the annual report, and the analysis that the support staff gives to the committee is quite a concise version of the non-financial and as well as the financial performances of the department and its entities. So with that, Chairperson, I'd like to say thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks very much. This is the analysis by the content advisor and the researcher, not the presentation of the department. So it was just to say this is how the department is shaped, and here are the holes in operations of the department, whether it's a program one up to the last program. Just for us, when we go to discussions after the presentation of the acting DG, we are aware of all those issues that the committees are alerted to. So it's by way of saying, look at this so that when you engage, you are informed by what the researchers and content advisors have done. Now, we're not going to ask questions on this one. We'll go straight to the AG. Not because we don't have time. We do have time. We have the day to engage on this. But we'll now go to the AG. And then after the engagement with AG's presentation, we'll then go to the department. I'm sure by that time we'll be clearer on what the Department of Communications is presenting to us on their on their annual report. AG, over to you. Yes, please. We want to see you, we want to hear you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. We were presenting on the audit outcomes for the communications portfolio today. I'm not sure, it looks like the presentation is not very clear, but we do have hard copies available that's being handed out. Chairperson, this is the result of an audit cycle that we finalized recently, the end of July. We had numerous extensive engagements with all the stakeholders on the audit outcomes, and today is the pinnacle of that engagement. our role is really to emphasize the fact that we're here today to strengthen the country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance. So our role today is also to reflect on these audit outcomes and empower the Portfolio Committee with their important oversight role. I want to spend time on this slide to just indicate that if we talk about a clean audit and our audit outcome in general, we talk about these three elements. We talk about the financial statements, whether the financial statements fairly present. So are they accurate? Are they reliable? Can you make decisions based on that financial statement? The second element is the performance information. So we don't express ourselves in terms of how did the department performed. We express ourselves in terms of how well did they report against their predetermined objectives. So the Portfolio Committee approves their annual performance plan every year, and we then report against or the department or the entities report against it, and we comment on those reports. And then the last leg is the compliance matters, compliance with laws and regulations. Now, ideally, a department or an entity that received a clean audit can tick all three of these boxes, and that's ideally where we would like to be. On the next slide, a clean audit. I'm not sure why this is not presenting beautifully, but nevertheless, a clean audit is this on your slide.
Perfect. Slide.
Thank you, Chair. Unqualified audit with no findings is what we call a clean audit. So all three matters have been addressed. If you look at unqualified with other matters in this portfolio, there's three entities that's in that category. It means that financial management is sound. What they've reported in their financial statements, we can reasonably give assurance on. But there's other matters that they need to attend to, either on performance information or on issues around non-compliance. I will highlight those to you. The other type of opinion is a qualified audit opinion. This is where the misstatements in the financial statements could not be amended or adjusted before we had to finalize the audit process. As you are well aware, we have a time constraint. So we cannot audit into perpetuity. We have to cut off and make a decision on a certain date. In our case, it was the end of July, and we allowed the departments or the entities to adjust wherever they can, but those adjustments that cannot be fixed will then result in a qualified audit opinion. For completeness sake, I just want to refer to an adverse audit opinion. Where an adverse audit opinion is where we say we cannot rely on the financials, it's wrong. In this portfolio, there's no such opinion, which I think need to be applauded, as well as the disclaimed opinion, where we could not find enough documentation to make a decision. You will remember 4 years ago, SABC was in that space, and for the last 3 years, they've moved out of the disclaimer position to qualified. Chairperson, I'm sharing my presentation with Promise Buthelezi. He's the senior manager, and he's going to take us through the detail of the presentation. But I would like to also request the committee to keep their questions to the end, and then we'll deal with the questions and allow Promise to go through the presentation in its fullness. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Chairperson, if maybe as my opening statement, I'd like to emphasize that the ideal situation for a portfolio is to have clear administration, which will translate into a clean opinion. And the observation that we've made mainly in those entities which have attained the clean audit or any other entity in general, which has attained the clean audit, One focus area that they focus on is your daily and your monthly internal controls, which therefore will assist the entity or a department in collation of the information at the end of the financial year, which will ensure that there's credible and there's accurate financial and performance information. So that's probably a key area where the other entities which are not yet at that phase of the clean opinion should try and focus on. So I've included one slide where we've just listed the entities mainly because there's been changes in this portfolio. I think so. Yeah. This one. It's ready. Yeah. Okay. So I've included a list of the entities which are there in the communications, and that's basically the analysis that we've done on. So if I do a three-year comparison, you'll notice that in 2013, 2014, and 2014, 2015, the opinions or the outcomes were more or less similar. However, if you look at the 2015-16, there's two things there which I'd like to highlight. One is to commend and congratulate the GCIS, because I mean they've maintained their clean audits. And also the new Department of Communication, they've also obtained the clean audits, which is very good. And again, I think it's more of the efforts which was put in by the GCIS, which is very good. And one major improvement which is there in the current year or in the 2015-16 financial year is the brand SA. Last year they had one compliance issue on supply chain. However, in 2015-16, they've made sure that they are eliminating that material non-compliance. So therefore, they've also received a clean opinion. But then, if we look in that yellow space and in that purple space, there we have three entities which are financially unqualified. However, one thing that's common between them is the issue on the prevention of regular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And I mean, if you look further down, that's where there's SABC. Again, there's a similar concern where they could not prevent regular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. But moreover, there in that bottom tier. The prevention has also resulted into a qualification of the audit opinion, mainly because the amounts which they've shown in a disclosure note, it was understated in some instances, it was overstated, and also in some cases they could not provide the supporting evidence for the expenditure which they've incurred as far as the procurement and contract management is concerned. So if maybe I can just focus specifically on the qualification of the SABC. Again, I've done a three-year comparison. One thing which is very clear is there's been a reduction in the number of the qualification areas. I mean, if you look in 2014, there were 8 qualifications, and then in 2015, the entity was sitting at 3 qualifications, and then in the 2015-16, the only left qualification was on a regular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, which I've noted before. But I think one major issue that we have with the reduction in the qualification is it's through the use of the consultants. And now the problem that that um, that that's coming with that is it might be very, very hard and difficult to try and sustain those the reduction in the qualification areas, mainly because when they come in, we have not obtained sufficient evidence to confirm that the internal control status is improving. So that's probably one of the key areas that the committee really has to focus on. Is now let the entity must start implementing and establishing the very key internal controls which are going to be substantiated by the policies and procedures, which will therefore ensure that there is a culture of compliance moving forward. And then I'm gonna focus on also on the performance information and the compliance, as we've explained earlier on that we're focusing on the three areas: it's financials, performance, and it's the compliance. So these two entities which we've had the concerns or the findings on as far as the performance information is concerned, and which is the SABC and the ICASA. On both the entities, we've found that their key performance indicators, and in some instances their targets, they are not well-defined and they are not smart. Now, the challenge that comes with that is it becomes very difficult to try and hold the entity accountable on what they've planned to do if what they are planning to do is not is not really clear enough. If maybe by way of example, to make sure that I'm giving more consistency to it. So, for example, if you say the number of the provincial programs and the inserts to be broadcasted. Now, the issue with that is, it's fine, I understand the number, but, I mean, when you talk about your provincial programs, what are those? Because, I mean, we're trying to run away from a situation where the entity can bring any program and say, I've achieved it. So it's very important at the beginning to ensure that it's very clear what are they going to deliver. And if the targets are smart, they should be verifiable, they should be measurable, they should be specific. So we should know exactly what they're going to do for the committee to be able to hold the entities accountable. So that's one major improvement which the committee has to try and enforce. And again, maybe if I can I bring another example is where we say the number of page views on the entity's website. Maybe one important thing to also look into is that should be linked into the objective and the strategy of the entity. I mean, if we're just tracking the hits on the website, is it really in line with the objective of the entity? Again, it must be put in such a way that we know exactly why those links or those hits are gonna be assessed on the website, and what's the intention for a person to go into the website, because I mean, this key performance indicator specifically was talking about selling the content on their website. So if maybe I go on Google and just type the entity, it's not really in line with the objective of the key performance indicator. And I mean, that should be read also with the targets. If you say 15% per annum, there should be a baseline. There should be the total population, and then whatever hits that you get, you must measure those against the baseline, which is a denominator. So it's those things that the committee really has to improve on. in terms of assessing the annual performance plans, which the entities and the departments they are tailing. Again, on the next slide, it's more of explaining further what were the key common issues, which I've explained. It is the issues on the indicators; they were not well defined. The targets, they were not measurable, and on the actual information, in some instances, we could not obtain sufficient evidence that it's actually valid, accurate, and complete. And now I'm going to move into the material non-compliances, which is very important because, I mean, for one entity to have a clean opinion, it must make sure that there is no findings on performance information and there's also no material non-compliances. So it's very key. And again, in terms of the comparison and in terms of the assessment of the entire portfolio, you'll see that there's three entities which received a clean opinion, and then there were issues and concerns in terms of the material non-compliances in the other four. And I mean, those material non-compliances, they were mainly on one, the material misstatements in the submitted financial statements. So ideally what it means is on the 31st of May, when we received the financial statements, there were some cases where we've picked up the material misstatements. If they were not corrected, they were gonna result into a qualified opinion. And I mean, in examples, in this portfolio, there were two entities which submitted the financial statements, which we picked up that they're actually not credible enough as they were when they were submitted, and those entities are SABC and the MTDA. However, with our process of auditing, we afforded the MTDA an opportunity to go back and revisit their financial statements and correct, and then therefore they ended up not receiving a qualified opinion. However, on the SABC side, they did correct some material misstatements. However, which I've explained earlier, that there is one which they could not resolve, which is a regular fruitless and useful expenditure disclosure note. And then, as I've explained, the prevention of irregular, fruitless, or wasteful expenditure is common in the entire four instances, which is probably something which we need to zoom into. It's common in the four entities which do not receive the clean opinion. And then I think the other two that I'd like to zoom into also is the consequence management. And there, I must specify that our assessment is specifically on the irregular, fruitless, and useful expenditure. Because ideally, the process should be, once you've picked up a regular expenditure, now the next phase is to investigate it and see what's the nature of it. Is there any person that's responsible? And I mean, there should be the adequate steps which are taken against the person if there's any need. So we've observed that in the past couple of years, and again, I mean, this is obviously interlinked into a qualification into a regular fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So we feel there's not much which has been happening as far as the amount which is qualified at the SABC and which is shown there. And I mean, that is interlinked into the one block above where we're talking about the management of procurement and contract management. But one thing which is not really shown per se on this slide. Okay, fine. I'll cover that in the next slide. So in the following slide, that's where we're showing the full picture of what a regular fruitless and wasteful expenditure was in the entire portfolio. But then one disclaimer which I'd like to highlight is, firstly, the majority of the regular expenditure, which is there on the graph, it's relating into the SABC. However, those numbers which are shown there, firstly, it's a movement for the current year. So that movement is comprised of both the amounts relating to the current year and the amounts relating to the prior year, but which was identified in the current year. And the last disclaimer I'd like to make with that amount is the fact that it's qualified. So it means it's not credible enough to try and interrogate and look into it. It can be more, it can be less, because, I mean, the qualification, as I've explained earlier, is the overstatement of the disclosure notes, it's the understatement, and also there's some cases where there was a limitation. So I'm not going to spend too much time on those figures. And then one thing which I've said I'd like to highlight was maybe to commend ICASA. In the previous year, their movement was 30 million. But then in the 2015-16, their regular expenditure was 2.5 million. So there's been some reduction in it, the ideal situation obviously is to make sure that we're eliminating the entire amount and ensure that there's no material non-compliances. And then next up is to just assess and just see what's the key root causes. Why more especially the entities in the yellow block and the entities in the purple block. What's the key root causes of them not improving their internal controls and not improving obviously their outcomes? And we've done the analysis as per your leadership, your financial and performance management, and the assessment of the governance. However, on the governance side, we're very specific on your assurance providers, so which is your internal audits, which is your audit committees, and your risk management processes. So, on the leadership, I think one biggest thing to highlight there, and I mean you can see on the slide. On the far right, it's red, it's SABC. Our assessment was mainly based on the fact that there's been the instabilities at a leadership level. And I mean, at that level, it's those structures which will ensure that they enforce the compliance to all the applicable laws and regulations, so therefore which will improve your daily and your monthly internal control, and ideally, which should translate into the credible financial information. So that's one of the key issues that we've picked up, which is translating into the weaknesses in the internal control environment. And also, if you look at the MDDA in the past 3 years, at some point they were clean. And then they started regressing with the two material non-compliance. And in the previous year, they've received four material non-compliances in their audit report. And again, we are associating that with the instabilities which are there also at a senior management level. So that's one of the key things also that the portfolio committee should look into in trying to address. And then, if maybe we go and look specifically into the assurance providers. So basically, it's the stakeholders which are involved in the entire process of ensuring that there's accurate and there's credible information. As I've explained earlier on, if you look at the first block there, so that first tier, the first level of assurance, again, one thing which is a sore thumb there is the MDDA. more especially at its senior management level. There's been significant vacancies pretty much throughout the entire financial year, so which we feel is has resulted into the regression. But then also, if you look at your accounting authority level or your accounting officer level, again, there are also times you find that we've assessed that the MDDA and the SABC, they have major instabilities in that level. So it's either the instabilities or it's either the vacancies in that level, which the committee should really look into. And then another one in the second level of assurance, which we would like to highlight, is on the internal audit and the audit committee. Again, you'll see that there's going to be a similar trend of the entities that you find that they're included in there. It's your MDDA and your SABC. Again, it's mainly because of the vacancies and your instabilities in those structures, so therefore they've resulted into a regression. So on the next one, next slide, we've just included what we've assessed as the three key root causes that the committee has really to focus on and look into, and we've included some recommendations also in that regard. The first one, we feel there's a slow response in terms of improving the internal control. I mean, my first slide was on the comparison over the past 3 years, and you'll see that it's similar, well, except for one improvement, which was the friend essay. And you'll find that those material non-compliances, they're similar year in, year out. So it means there's that slow response in trying to improve the issues which are reported by internal and the external audit process. So that's one. Two, we've picked up that the instabilities and the vacancies in key positions should also be improved. I mean, it's been very clear and evident at SABC and at MDDA. And then the last one is more on the not having the adequate consequence management to hold any person who has not complied with a particular law or regulation. So again, that's one thing which the committee should look into. So now we've included our suggested recommendations, but which are at an overall level. So I'm gonna try and just highlight we feel the recommendations they should be adopted by the committee. So one is having a process which will ensure that there's credible and there's accurate financial and performance information system. And I mean, that's pretty much where you're going to incorporate your assurance providers. But one important thing to do first is to ensure that in those structures, there's reliable and there's competent people which will be able to exact which will act in a manner that they are appointed in that position for. So what's very important there is having a very effective internal audit process, which will ensure that they are assessing on a daily basis any weaknesses in the internal controls, and then from there make sure that there is an audit committee which will assess and analyze whatever information which is brought onto their table and ensure that it's accurate and it's credible. The next recommendation is to ensure that there's a effective performance management system which is going to be at an at the entity level, and also ensure that there is also an individual performance management system to be able to hold the specific personnel and the individuals accountable for whatever non-compliances which they are doing. And then, one very important recommendation which I'm making is to ensure that the vacancies in the key positions, they should be filled as soon as possible, but in filling those vacancies, we ensure that the entities are appointing the appropriate and the competent people in those positions. And then we just need to make sure that there is a proper record management system which will ensure that it's addressing the issues which have been raised at SABC in terms of the limitation of scope findings which have resulted into a qualification in the opinion. And then improve on the daily and your monthly internal control, because, I mean, that's basically, well, the basic set of control that one can never have. And it goes mainly with the culture. If on a daily basis you ensure that you comply with all the policies and procedures, so therefore, at the end of the financial year, there is no way that you can never have the accurate and the credible financial and the performance information. So that's the challenge that I'm posing on the committee, maybe to try and adopt those recommendations and try and implement those. In the next slide, I've just included the commitments which we picked up now and then whenever we're engaging the executive authority. The reason why we've said they are still in progress, it's because we have not assessed their impact thus far. Because I'm aware after year end, the audit committee forum was there. However, we just need to assess the impact and see that those commitments have been fully implemented. So again, I'm not going to focus or dwell too much into those.
And before we finalize, I just think that I would like to make a summary of the issues at the, especially at the SABC, because it's the one entity that is still qualified in this portfolio. And I think, firstly, we need to recognize the improvement that's happened at the SABC in terms of the financial management. The last 3 years, there has been a significant improvement in dealing with some of the qualified issues. But we did note the leadership instability at CEO level, at ExCo member level, quite a number of vacancies and people on suspension. We did also engage management on the weak internal control environment that needs attention to make sure that your financial management on a day-to-day basis are accurate. Promise has elaborated on the qualification of irregular expenditure, but I want to emphasize it's both irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Those two amounts in the financial statements are misstated. We had instances where it was overstated, where SABC have included amounts in the irregular and fruitless or wasteful that we don't believe is irregular and fruitless or wasteful, but it was also understated where there were amounts that were not reported. So they need to do an exercise to clean up what is actually the amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You would also have noted that we referred to the lack of record management at SABC. This relates to tenders where we were not able to get the documentation. In the audit report, we referred to an amount of 141 million, which could not be extracted in the time frame we allowed. We don't say it's not there. But the document management system is making it difficult for them to retrieve these documents in time for us to audit. And then lastly, the weak performance management system that exists needs attention, and we also have engaged management on rectifying this system to make sure that people are being held accountable for these transgressions as and when they occur. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are you done? Members, that's the Auditor General's briefing. This helps us to look at the issues that will be reported by the department and the entities. And I will allow members to get clarities on these matters before we go to the committee. Is that okay? So that we can be clear as to what AG is saying before we can go to the to the entities themselves. Honorable Self, Honorable Kalako.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, Chairperson, and thanks for that presentation, which I think was very helpful. It's obviously on a very high level, but what was obvious from the presentation that the one entity that is in a degree of difficulty is the SABC. For that reason, I wondered whether it would be possible to get the detailed audit findings for this year relating to the SABC. I say so because we have a separate duty to perform in relation to the SABC and its board in particular. And related to that, I wondered whether you would venture an opinion about whether the board of the SABC has fulfilled its fiduciary duties in terms of the Act in relation to the performance of the corporation.
Thank you, Chair. I know maybe some of the questions will questions which will be addressed by SABC directly. Maybe it might be unfair for us to raise those with the Treasurer. But nonetheless, maybe we'll if you can, you'll answer them. Just on previous occasions, SABC have been attributing its deficit most of the time on previous years, but you have shown us here the improvement which have been happening. But there have been this argument that the SABC have unfunded mandate. I think they tend to emphasize that. Of all these international events and events of significance for the country, including sport. And in that way, they are always arguing around that when you look into their books. But of importance to me, I don't know whether is that possible you can do. On as you are picking up on lack of controls around tenders, is it possible that for you can, without us, as we'll ask them also to provide us with what type of tenders, what amounts of those tenders, and what's the nature of those tenders which you might be picking a problem or the lack of those controls around. Maybe it will also answer in detail getting exactly what is this wasteful expenditure you get around there. So I wanted just those clarities, Chair, on those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If from the AJ, I want to ask them while they are here. If we go to the CIS annual report, that document, that thick document, on page 108, 6.7. It says unaudited supplementary schedule. It says the AG did not audit that, and page 171 to 183. Now, just a question is, why did it happen? What happens when the AG does not audit that those pages, so that part of the documents? Why do they not?
Thank you, Honorable Kongobele and Honorable Tsedi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm on the purely on the recommendation page, just to deal with the flip side of the recommendations. For instance, in the area where you are doing recommendations, where you are dealing with the need for thorough review of reliability and credibility before the submissions. The question I have there, although I know these questions will be directed to the department, but for credibility purposes as an independent institution, I'm curious to know do they have internal audit structures? That is the first point. And then the second question, again, flip side of the recommendation. You say implement performance management system. My question is, does it exist? Fourth bullet. The record management system with regard to procurement and contract, do we have those from your own observation? What comments do you have generally on the state of the governance structures? I mean, across the department, of course, with a particular emphasis to those who are slightly relates. The other issue is, which I think is very, very important, the last bullet. Is there any appraisal system to address that recommendation? Because if you make it as a recommendation, I'm not sure whether you are recommending it because it exists, but it's not being executed. Or if it is executed, it's not being executed adequately. Lastly, on the performance information, I think it's one thing to have a clear performance information that assists you to have a sense of what is happening. From the quantity point of management, that would be useful. I'm curious if you have a role, for instance, with regard to the impact assessment. In other words, the quality side, the quality outcomes. What I'm trying to say, for instance, if SABC says these are the programs we want to put on air, whatever nature of the program it is, naturally you are responding to a particular problem. I'm not sure if your auditing does assess knowing what is targeted by that program at any regular time, the quality outputs in terms of what the impact is.
Thank you. If you can't survive without a phone on, when you are closer to the mic, just switch it off because it is disturbing. But I think that question of internal audit committees, surely it must be across the board. You can't have all entities definitely must have. So we will have to deal with that even when we meet other entities. Honorable Sedi.
Honorable Chair, looking at the recommendations that you are making, there is one very critical issue that is not coming up very clear. And it impacts on, and it obviously impacts on your work as you make or come up with an opinion in terms of how the entities are handling their affairs. Is the issue of the targets that are not well defined, the one that you indicated earlier on? Because surely if targets are not well defined, at some stage they were then approved as such. So the question that arises is, at the stage those targets were approved, why was the issue not picked up? And I'm raising this thing because it impacts on your work. If at some stage you'll then be able to express an opinion because targets were not approved, who approved them? So I'm saying it's an issue that I would have appreciated a situation where, as part of your recommendations, you are then able to clearly recommend that in the process of the approval of the targets, that issue needs to be looked at very, very closely. I appreciate the analysis that you have made in terms of the improvements, in terms of how the entities were handling their affairs, with the challenges that the SABC has, indicating that over a period of 3 years, now they are left with the issue of the fruitless, wasteful, and what do you call it? Expenditure as such. The last one, in your analysis, would you proudly say that issues that are handled by consultants in the entities, are there no issues that would have been handled internally? Because in the process of part of what we look at in terms of appointing people, be it executive level, boards, the issue of skill comes up very, very clearly. So I'm saying in your analysis, are there no entities that you will then be able to say, but some of these issues are handled by consultants, but in our view, these issues could have been handled internally within the organization. So the rest of the issues, let me pack them, Chair, so that I'm then able to raise them when we come back to the real presentation. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Van Dijk. I'm just rounding up all members so that we don't come back to this.
Chair,
if you don't have a question, it's fine.
I'm actually curious. On the last page, 23 says that the minister will follow up on commitments or follow up on commitments by the minister. I'm just curious if in the past has it been done by her to follow up or write letters? Because if I look at slide 16 and 17, it's clear that if she has, it didn't result into any positive. Because on slide 17. There's actually the irregular expenditure, it actually increased. And SABC in every bullet point on slide 16, SABC and NDDA, they're there again. So I was just thinking, is that how do we actually hold these entities to account if even written letters from the minister doesn't help to get them to perform better?
Machoba, if there is something, if there is none, it's okay.
Thank you, Chair. My clarity is on page 23. Around the issue of establishment of an audit committee forum. I just need the clarity who's going, it will be established by whom.
when? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Madisha?
My colleagues have covered me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mbinda? Covered. Honorable Tolasha?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Maybe let me start by, as the AG is convinced and congratulate the entities, and in this case the department, on the progress that has been made from other entities that have not been doing very good. Of course, they are not yet there, some of them like SABC. However, there is progress that is recorded. I think that's quite positive, and you need to congratulate and really make sure that this has been achieved in a particular time. Chair, mine under the key recommendations for improvement, the bullet point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they establish and implement action plans in response to external and internal audit findings. These must be monitored by the assurance providers. I just want to get to hear from the AG's office whether in their sense they are such. I know for a fact that the actual department is new, but some entities have been there for the last 20 years. So I just want to get a sense from them when they put that recommendation in the sense, are their systems in place? Because for me, these are quite important, because if you talk internal and external, I'm referring directly to them in this case, because there were findings last year by the AG. Therefore, if they still generalize to say there should be establishment and implementation, what does that mean? Because the fear I'm sitting with now is that there might be no systems to achieve that. Are they, in their sense, do they think this recommendation is achievable when they look at the detail as they were sitting with the report? Thank you very much, Chair.
Follow-up, Honorable Kungbela.
Sorry about this. I'm not intending to delay. I just found brainwaved by Honorable Member Tsedi. Just to follow up on that point, to say, to what extent is your auditing work proactive? Because I think that's what actually finds sense in what you say. To what extent do we always come at the end? What role do we have in actually assessing the sensibility of plans?
Member Pankavi.
Thank you, Chair. I am covered in the other clarities that I wanted to seek. Except for one, I just need some clarification in terms of the overall performance of entities and departments. Are you focusing on financial management, but are you not at some stage measuring the set targets against the money spent, and how are you dealing with that issue, and also, in your recommendations, are you also reflecting on that as a matter of concern? Because we find that previously I've seen that, for instance, a specific entity or department would spend 98% of their budgets, but the targets that they've set for the financial year, they've reached 40% of their targets. How do you deal with that issue? Thank you.
I think that was the last speaker. I had that question, Honorable Van Skalvik. Just for the AG to share with us, yes, finances and performance and all of that, but the impact, whether you talk SABC, whether you talk any entity, whether you talk any department, but at the end, how does work done by those departments and work you audit have an impact on our communities, in short, service delivery. Because for me that's important. Finances can be clean and all of that, but how does it impact to bettering the lives of the people? That's one thing. The second thing is, you will definitely have to hold departments by hand as the independent auditing department, if you like, to say this is what needs to be done. In short, I'm saying, surely we must not leave things until we audit. The taking by hand for me means that, so that they improve as they go. Yes, I know the audit committees and all of that, but I think there must be some kind of program that assists them as department to improve. And generally, your outcomes are on administration or the administrative arm and the leadership arm. So those are the things that I'm very interested in terms of moving forward as Auditor General. Taking them by hand, those who know best the military tactics. There is what is called ambush or reconnaissance. Sometimes when you reconnoitre, you do it by fire, and the enemy will emerge. So I'm saying you just need to do that continuously, I guess, so that at the end, when you embark on audit, you just deal with that. Don't cut out the military thing, SABC. Don't just edit that one because it doesn't belong here. So that's what I was trying to say, members, because I think we need to let them learn as we go.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, members, for the questions. I'll respond to it and will then ask Promise to add if he wants to add some insights. There was a question around the detailed audit findings. We have a full management report after every audit. It's a management report that is a tool that we use during an audit. So it's between the auditors and management, but you're welcome to engage management and request it directly from them. We are not at liberty to distribute that. It's actually a management report, so it's with them with all the findings, recommendations, etc. The only document that's public is the audit report that we will be able to share. There was a question around the board of the SABC. With my summary of SABC, I did address some of these, but I think there was, firstly, we didn't do a full governance review of the board. But what we did detect during our audit is that, firstly, there was an effort to address the financial performance matters, some of them very technical, and when I, maybe, let me do it now. There was a question also around the consultants and whether they will be able to deal with, or what's the issue at SABC. The two matters that were resolved this year was highly technical, and SABC did not have the skills to deal with it. It's not something that
any accountant will be able to resolve. It was related to the technical matter on how to account for the TV licenses, where you had to work on probability models. It was quite a complicated exercise where they needed the consultants to do some exercise. And the other one was related to the tax matters at SABC. Now, both those, they had to use consultants. What we're raising is that the moment the consultants leave, will there be capacity in the SABC to deal with that vacuum then? But they did appoint a CFO recently in the latter part of the year, and it's a qualified CFO. We trust that she will be able to deal with the matters going forward. So coming back to the board, there was an effort to deal with the financial management issues. Unfortunately, the issue around the irregular expenditure has not been resolved as yet. And then again, the issue around how do they report against performance is a matter that needs attention. There was another question around the unfunded mandates. I believe that it's the responsibility of the SABC to make sure that they're in a financial health, a good financial health status. So we also engage the management on the unfunded mandates and unfunded projects that they have. But I think the bottom line is that there needs to be a mechanism developed to deal with this and not continue to incur losses, because a repetitive losses year after year is going to get to a stage where the SABC might not be in a financial health, in a good financial health position in future. And that's one thing that we have to keep our eye on. There was a question around the tenders and the nature of these tenders. There is disclosure in the financial statements where they've got a note on the irregular expenditure. But as we said, that note is not complete. The entity needs to go back and determine what's the exact number of the irregular expenditure that was incurred by the SABC over the last number of years. This matter, the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, has been qualified for at least 5 years. So it goes back to this record management vacuum that exists, where they need to go back to previous tenders and determine whether it was irregular or not irregular, but you need to get the tender documents to determine that. There was a question around the GCIS and in the annual report, the clarity around the unaudited supplementary schedules. In terms of the framework that's been issued by Treasury, the financial statements does not contain, the official financial statements does not contain those supplementary schedules. Those supplementary schedules were compiled by the departments and entities as additional information. So we don't express an opinion on the detail of that. We only express it on the full set of financial statements as prescribed by Treasury. So that is just additional information. There was a comment about credible financial statements and performance reporting, and the comment was, do they have internal audit, and does a performance management system exist? I will say there's a broken performance management system. It needs a review. It's not effective. They started the process in the year to revive it. And in our engagement with management, they did indicate that they are working on this on a revised performance management system. It will be good to get a status update from the SABC on that matter then. As I refer to the record management system, they do have a record management system. It's just broken, especially as far as it relates to tenders and tender processes, the procurement processes. Other records are better controlled. For instance, the records around content management, assets, etc. So we did identify some internal control weaknesses, but the challenge of extracting records is mainly as far as it relates to tenders and tender documentation. The governance structures, SABC does have an internal audit and audit committee. What we are mentioning in our recommendations is that they need to compile an action plan not only on our audit report. So what we would ideally like to see is that any entity that received an unqualified with other matters or a qualified audit opinion needs to go back to all the findings we've raised during the audit. Because if they only focus on watching the audit report, you might get next year that there was matters that were not material, then suddenly becomes material and it finds its way into the audit report. So it's extremely important that all entities compile an action plan that deals with the full complete set of findings. The target's not well defined. We did do an early annual performance plan assessment performance assessment before the executive approves it. And what we normally do is we issue recommendations and we allow the entities and departments to review those. It's then up to the entity to make sure that all the recommendations are implemented and reviewed. If you go back a few years in the assessments for the entities in this portfolio, there has been an improvement, especially as far as it relates to targets, but we're not there yet. For the two entities that still have usefulness findings, they still need to work on clarifying those. But I want to note this for you, Chairperson, as well, around the question that you asked around impact. We need to be clear that as an audit process, we only audit what has been reported against predetermined objectives. Okay. So if those predetermined objectives doesn't talk to specific targets that assess impact, we would not have looked at impact. Okay. And this is the journey the country is on, to say how do we move from targets that are input and output driven to become outcome driven and impact driven. To say, and coming back to your argument, Chair, to say if they've got so many budget of millions and billions, what was the impact of spending this? Now, this is not an assessment that the Auditor General will make. This is assessment that the entity or department will make if they confine their or redefine their targets adequately, to say we have a target that tells us we're going to measure this and this is how we're going to measure it in future. I spoke to the question around the consultants already. Then there was a comment on the commitment by Minister, especially as it relates to the commitments. I would like to answer this in twofold. Firstly, the letters were sent out, and even with our relationship with Minister, there was a number of sessions right through the year where there was engagement between entities and Minister, and we were invited to those sessions as well. There is some success stories in the portfolio where ICASA reduced the irregular from 30 million to only 2.5 million. As a result of intervention, MDDA had a 5.3 million irregular expenditure. The challenge is still the SABC and how they deal with the irregular expenditure. As I mentioned earlier, if we allowed additional time, we might have got to a different answer. But we had to cut off the audit at a certain stage to say we cannot allow additional time to work on and fixing the irregular expenditure and the amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure at the SABC. They will need to go back, retrieve documentation, go back a few years to determine exactly what is the irregular expenditure. And once they know what's the regular expenditure, they will only then start to implement the consequence management process. Because you need to determine whether any expenditure is irregular first before you can then enforce consequences. The Audit Committee Forum, this forum was established by the Ministry and the Department to bring all the Audit Committee chairs together to share insights, to make sure that what works in the departments, because there's three entities, the two departments and the entity that are clean, to share that knowledge with the other audit committees. So it's really a capacity building committee. It was already established, and I believe they've met already. And it was really with the purpose to strengthen the governance in this portfolio. Chair, I spoke to the action plan. There was a comment, a question around the action plan, and as I just want to reiterate, the action plans, we say it must be established and implemented. It means there is action plans, but it might not be complete because we don't want an action plan that only focuses on the audit report. It must deal with the full internal control breakdown in the entities where they're not clean. And maybe I must also mention that even those that are clean might have internal control weaknesses, but they're not material, and they don't affect it won't necessarily affect the reader's review of the annual financial statements or the information in the annual report. The challenge is, again, if we don't deal with those, it might become issues later. So even our clean entities, we do encourage them to go back and review any finding that we have during the audit and make sure that they are addressed. Chairperson, there was a question around to what extent are the audits proactive? Audit by its nature is historic. We audit historic events. And that's why the Constitution says you audit and you report. We cannot audit once before a transaction happens. We audit after life has happened at the auditees. But what we do engage on is that we do a quarterly internal control assessment, and we engage the entities and the minister quarterly on these. So there's continuous engagement right through the year to talk about these matters. And that was why we, even before we got the financial statements, for instance, for SABC, we knew that there was already a lot of work done on the two qualifications that were able to resolve last year. But we also knew that the irregular expenditure might not be resolved. So it didn't come as a surprise to say this qualification is not what was expected. There was a anticipated expectation during the year that SABC might just deal with this, but we ran out of time, and they ran out of time to deal with this. Lastly, Chairperson, just on your comment on the engagements, I think it's important to note that our management reports also have not only the findings, but we also engage the entities on what is the root cause and what is the recommendation. And it's important that the root causes finds its way into the action plan to say, why did this happen? Do we have the skill? If we don't have the skill, let's fix that. And that is the proactive engagement that we have. Once we've done our audit, we monitor this through the next audit. And we try together with the entities to make this process a constructive process right through the year and not only a punitive process at year end. Chairperson, I trust I've dealt with the comments and also the issue around the impact that you were very, very keen on to say we did not assess the impact of the money spent. Thank you, Chair.
Members, I said we are asking AG for the last time because we still have to engage two entities. The department, not entities, two departments, DOC and the GCIS. But if you will die if you don't ask the question. I won't allow the situation where there is someone dying here. Honorable Tsedi and Honorable Kongbera.
I will die, Chairperson.
And Honorable
I'm sorry.
Can, Honorable Kongbera?
I think it will be...
I thought it's my time.
Oh. No. Kongbera, sort out the phone thing. Because I did warn it's you.
No, it's
he must sort out this phone thing because I warned the members.
Is it me?
I don't know if it's you.
Okay, all right. It's done. It's done, Sir President. I'm sorry. I think it is important because as we go to line departments, there are critical clarities that you don't want to second guess as you go to departments. You see, the proactive question is very important. And the intention is not to change the convention of the historic assessment. Because an existing plan can be audited, whether it makes sense or not. So that's what we're asking, before you implement it. Because we're saying we are new in some of these things. So the question is, can we assist one another proactively? Because can you imagine... if the entire year you sit with a plan which has got a useless performance information and only come to terms with it, that plan has been adopted, budgeted, budget allocated, and so on. Is there no better way of optimally using you by saying proactively, once plans are there, maybe you have 1 day or 1 week to assess them, say, can you guys speak better here? The second question is, I think we asked this thing, the Chairperson also asked it, is, are you suggesting that, are you saying, you guys, you don't do the performance audit at a national level? Because this is not the performance audit that we're speaking about now. So it would be important to clarify that. If not, at what point? Because it's important as politicians, as we go to the next financial year, we have a sense that is scientifically based on what difference the decisions we're taking are making.
Honorable Kalako raised one very, very important question earlier. And I'm raising this thing in the light of the SABC now being left with one matter of emphasis. And I want to assume in one or another it's linked to this particular issue. The issue of the unfunded mandates of the SABC. That issue was not addressed. And I don't want to be a spokesperson. But I'm saying, without necessarily the rest, I think they'll then be able to answer themselves. But I had thought, in your analysis, you will then, because these things have been happening, events of national importance have been broadcasted. The impact on their finances. So I thought you would then be able to say, in the process of you analyzing their finances, to what extent are these events impacting on this last matter of emphasis that were grappling towards them getting an unqualified audit opinion? Yeah, just that one.
Thank you, Chair. Just a slight question from the AG's team, in the simplest terms, when they say the record of issuing of tenders is broken, can I get more clarity? What does that mean for me? Because I don't want to second guess what the AG is trying to tell us. I really want, before I get to the actual entity and the department itself. Thank you.
And that's a critical area. to have a broken whatever. Tenders are, it's where money is. But again, I think that question, we just need to delve deeper on it. The Honourable said this question. I did deal with it with SABC one time, interview. And my clarity was that we are not, when it was said, it's under 3% that they get from us, and therefore, in this hall, in this committee room, they can't, not necessary to account to us. I think members will remember that. And my view was that it's not about you get a million. It's about the mandate you have been given to manage the national broadcaster. Whether you get how much, but the mandate that you are given is that of handling a national broadcaster for South Africans. So I think that question is also linked to what I was saying when I was interviewed by SABC after the fracas in the committee of the 23rd.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. There was a follow-up question on the proactiveness, and I think it's a very important comment to make, because what we do currently is we do an assessment proactively, but we don't follow through on those before the committee then approves, or the executive approves and the committee approves. Normally because we ran out of time. We get the performance plan very late and we had to do it very quickly, and then there's no time to go back and forth. But we will do our best this year to tighten those, to make sure that we check it and confirm the usefulness before it goes through. Or where there's usefulness findings, we elevate it to the committee early in the year. We will commit to do that because that's part of what we do. And Honourable Member, through you, Chair, you're completely correct to say we didn't do performance audit unless there's a specific request to do a performance audit on a certain area, where we then assess the effectiveness and efficiency of processes. So once we do have a process where we can start engaging on a specific request for a performance audit, we do those then. The issue around the unfunded mandate, Chair, I don't have the amount of the unfunded mandate, and maybe that will be a better question to ask the SABC around it. But maybe just for me to create the clarity, the unfunded mandate is not linked to the qualification that they currently have. The qualification they have is on the procurement processes that were not properly followed. Okay, so that's the irregular expenditure. So they didn't follow due process when they procured in the prior years as well as the current year. It's not only related to the past. In the current year, there were also tenders where they did not follow a proper procurement process. Okay. But as we said, although we identify these instances, we don't know whether it's everything. And they need to go through an exercise to determine exactly how many processes were flawed or processes were not followed during the year and current years. In the audit report for the SABC, we have stated an amount, and I'm going to quote from the report. It says, supporting documentation to verify the disclosure of 141 million to test compliance against supply chain regulations were not provided for audit purposes. That's where we then talk about, in my words, the broken performance record management system, they do have a system where they file documents, but it's not effective. And not all the documents are duly filed where they're supposed to be, so that it makes it easy when audit asks for documents, because we only audit on a sample, so we ask for specific documents, for the SABC then to be able to retrieve those documents and provide it for audit purposes. That's why we also say, if we couldn't get these documents, we cannot determine whether it's irregular or not. It might just be that due process was followed, but we cannot determine that because we didn't get the records to audit. I trust that helps with the with my wording on broken record management, Chair. Thank you very much.
I think we are fine now. I think it's fitting to say thank you very much, AJ. Very clear presentation and explanations to what members wanted, where members wanted clarity. We'll now release you to take the back seat. You can stay, be advisable, and listen to what we'll be doing with the department. And maybe the department led by the acting DG at the back there, the minister is already here, and the deputy minister can take positions in front so that we can deal with the issues of Department of Communication. Members, if you can organize your documents properly, we are now going to get the briefing by the department on 15-16 annual report and financial statements. And those documents were circulated to you, both soft and on hard copies. You must also arm yourself with the presentation and the actual annual report, so that when one refers to a particular page of the annual report, you do have that document. Members, do you have this book? Not the presentation, you must have two, the book, the actual annual report book. This one, Honorable Mbeki, big one, not this one. You must have two. You must have the presentation and this one, which is the actual annual report. All members, this was sent to the your pigeonholes. This is quite critical because it deals with everything. This book is very, very important, members, and you were given, Honorable Kungbel, your pigeon hopes. Do you know what is called pigeon hopes? If there are extra copies, Mr. Forth, of the actual annual report, the book, only the two members, the two new members, Honorable Fandeki must have, all members of the committee must have, especially the old ones. Yeah, that's just like, where can we get some more of this? These members say they are sending pigeons to look for the holes. It's fine, members. You will get the documents if they are there as we proceed. I think the presentation will give us more or less everything. The big books are a point of reference, and it's a detail. But the presentations are just a summary of what is in the actual book of annual reports. And we'll start it this way, members. Which I always think it's a way to go, because the department is politically led and is administratively led, and it's always good to have a political overview of the department, not the presentation that would be made by the head of administration, what is called political overview of the department. I think I did in one of the meetings, I did raise this because of the practice in my other life. Well, I can safely say when I was in the provincial legislature, we get the political overview and of the department, and then we get the details from the head of department, in this case, which is the acting. And I'm looking forward for the period, Minister, where we won't have acting. Where we won't have acting, we have the actual DG. I will hand over to you, Minister, just to give us the highlights politically of the department before we can actually get the presentation. Sorry to bring things off other areas here, but I think it shapes the department properly because of what you occupy, the space you occupy. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, and good morning. Maybe I'll start from the previous presentation by the AG, just to put members in comfort, to say we take the issue of the report of the AG very serious as a ministry, based on the fact that if you have heard them, then we normally have quarterly meetings wherein we are reviewing the progress. And this is what we've done, to say when they do an implementation plan, that should address all the issues that the AG has raised. So through our interaction with the AG together with the entities, this has helped us a lot to improve on matters of importance. I need to also indicate then, taking this matter seriously, we said they must establish a CFO forum. CFO forum, the CFOs in the department, including the CFOs in the entire entities that report to the ministry. Way in then they are also meeting, remember, because the department is responsible for allocating of resources to the entities. That's where we also monitor progress. And then on our part then, we also, because as a new department, we deemed it fit that we need to have monthly meetings with chairs of boards. Chairs and CFOs weigh in, I chair the meeting to make sure that then there is compliance, and then we're able, and that has proven to be very useful, because in terms of this issue of quarterly meetings that we hear, we also get a report wherein if there are entities that have incurred irregular expenditure, they'll have to request to give us the details of the expenditure and the progress on consequence management. Then coming to, I wonder, Chairperson, should I also deal with the GCIS one, or should I first only deal with the OC, then when GCIS 10 comes, we'll deal with the GCIS matters?
I think we can, because there will be no other minister for GCIS. I think we can deal with both, because they are more or less complementing.
Thank you, Chair. The other hot potato which the AG has audited in the past was the issue of the use of consultants, the issue that members were also raising. When it comes to the two departments, for the period 2015-2016 financial year, you'll check in particular DOC, they implemented and achieved 63% of their planned target, and then there is a clean audit. And then it only happened with just 65 employees. In terms of the approved organogram, we're supposed to have 400 employees. Due to lack of funding, that Treasury has not funded most of the posts, then we are currently seated with 65 employees. And I want to assure members to say that includes also the establishment of the department. There was no consultant used. We utilize the services of the 65 employees. And then what happens normally is that then staff, some of them have to work extra hours and had to work three times than the normal call of duty. And then at times we borrow staff from GCIS, because most of the things is a shared service. Then we are, like there were times before we recruited our own CFO, the first commission where the CFO of GCIS was CFO for GCIS and also doing the work of CFO for DOC. That includes also the head of internal audit and all, because that was a shared service. That proved to also so work. And then when it comes to DOC itself, there are a number of successful achieved targets in the department for the year under review. And then you recall, those of you who are here, that at the beginning of the 2015-16 financial year, the department's vacancy rate was 53%, and this vacancy rate was reduced to 25% at the end of the financial year. The all vacant positions in the department were advertised to encourage open competition. And then it's also under the same year wherein then we launched the set-top boxes for the broadcasting digital migration program. And then we started this program in the Northern Cape, and then we have just made significant progress in implementing the project. And then with regard to the transformation of the media industry, we felt we need to expedite this and then address the challenges of media transformation. As we have then, as a department, developed a discussion paper on media transformation policy. You will recall, colleagues, that you are also dealing with the issue of the amendment of the FPB to Parliament. And then we have also inaugurated the South African Broadcast Production Advisory Body, as empowered by Section 38 of the Broadcasting Act of 1999. The main purpose of this body is to advise on how the development, production, and display of local TV and radio content can be supported. And then together, in partnership with the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services and Ellis Company, we, as a training provider, we've trained young people in the Northern Cape, wherein we launched the DTT project last year. The training program plans to cover all the municipalities with a target of 2,800 young people, with an intention to increase this number. With regard to GCIS, in June this year, GCIS celebrated the 100th edition of the government newspaper, Fukuz and Send. This is the first, which its first issue was produced in 2005. And then the newspaper is the only newspaper in the country that is published in all South African official languages, and it also includes the Braille. The newspaper has since August 2015 introduced a paid for government recruitment and generic government communication advertising section with the aim of generating advertising revenue to be used to increase the print and run the frequency of the paper. And then for the period of under review, we have got 1,920 development communication campaigns that were coordinated and implemented through the various platforms, and more than 47 million people were reached through this intervention. The other issue that I felt I need to raise is the issue with regard to funding constraints at the portfolio. The budgeted costs of employment represented the major portion of the total expenditure allocation at 58% to the baseline allocation, excluding goods and services, which takes another 30% of the budget. You'll recall, Honorable Member, that the chunk of our budget is not meant for us. We transfer it to entities. So that's what we're left with. And then the other issue that I also need to deal with upfront is the issue of challenges that regard to performance information and uselessness of the information. As I've indicated earlier, this is the issue that we've been together dealing with the AG, but there's a lot, it cut across all the entities, this one, to say there were some of the issues that were identified that relates to a large percentage target that were not specific, others were not clearly defined, and then in addition, a total of 50% reported objectives and indicator of 60% of the targets were not consistent with those in the approved annual plan and performance plan. And then also, there is two investigations that we have instituted into the governance matter that relates to the MDDA and the procurement processes by the Universal Services and Access Agency of South Africa. And then the draft investigation report has been complied. And then at ICASA, there's a case wherein the Hawks are also investigating the changes, the charges around the suspension of the former supply chain manager and related procurement matters. The investigation was started in 2013-14 financial year, and the said employee had since resigned from the organization. And the other issue that I felt we need to bring you to your attention is the issue of the office space. We are still sharing as a Department of Communication with the Government Communication and Information System, and the space has proven to be inadequate. The process of acquiring the office space for the Department of Communication has been put on hold due to the lack of funding. As an interim measure, a memorandum of understanding has been signed between the DOC and GCIS, which allows GCIS officials to continue providing certain corporate services related to support to the Department of Communication until it's able to fully perform its functions. That's what I can say in brief and short, Chairperson. Most of the issues, they are contained in the report. Then we'll be able to take answers as and when members direct them to us.
Yeah. No, thanks, Minister. I think that's what we needed. That's a high level, at a political level of the department. So we'll then zoom into details from the acting DG, and then members will move in terms of questions when we are done with the presentation. Over to you, Mr. Muzalele. Am I right?
Yes, Chair, you are right. You see, when you pronounce my surname, you must relax. you must say Munjelele. Then you will pronounce it properly.
It's like It's like you can't say with a sharp voice and small voice, you can't say nda. You must say nda with a paratone. So the females are in trouble. Okay, thanks, Mr. Acting DJ.
Now, thank you so much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Minister and the Deputy Minister. We thank you for the opportunity to present our very first annual report as the Department of Communications. I am joined here by my colleagues, Mr. Johannes Rantete, sitting at the back. He assists us with the entity oversight. As you know, that the majority of our budget goes into our entities. Next to me here is Ms. Dikeledi Tindisa, it's our CFO, who joined us from the 1st of April this year. And next to her is Ms. Matope Tusi, who is responsible for corporate services in the department. So they will also assist with the responses to the difficult questions at the end. Our presentation will focus on providing just a contextual framework. We'll also focus on the introduction, our mandate, legislative mandate, strategic goals, and overall performance and performance per program, and the financial performance, which will be done by the CFO. Just as a way of providing context, is that we the expectation that we've been given is that we need to improve on communication and marketing, you know, by ensuring that the citizenry, meaning that civil society, business, and everybody else, is informed, and also ensuring that we promote investments into the country, thereby spreading economic growth and job creation. In a way, the NDP becomes our guiding torch because it advocates for the fact that an informed citizenry makes informed decisions to be proactive participants in the economy, so that they can make choices. Second one, the next one is about the Constitution, because we've got a mandate which is to ensure that there is broadcasting, in the regulation of broadcasting in the country in the public interest, which is enshrined in Section 192 of the Constitution, and also Section 16 of the Constitution, which talks about the freedom of expression, in terms of ensuring that there is fairness and diversity in terms of the content that is consumed by the people. The next one talks to the medium-term strategic framework, what you call MTSF, which in the main talks to our contribution to outcome 14 in particular. But there is a requirement that we communicate all the 14 outcomes, as it were. That's why our colleagues in GCIS sits in all the outcomes, that there is a clear communication that must happen. The next one is our contribution to the 9-point plan, because the sector we're in is just it's a sector on its own. It contributes, it employs people. It also contributes to the GDP of the economy. The sector also participates in the exporting and importing of, in particular, content, into our shores. So this is just to provide that contextual framework. The department, we are presenting our overall performance of the department, as I indicated, against our planned deliverables, which are audited and have been submitted to DPME so that they can check if the things that we said we are going to do, we have done those, and also we can provide evidence on the things that we've been able to do. But we're also going to touch on the challenges that we've encountered in the implementation of the of our program of action and also the corrective actions that we have implemented as a department. As I indicated, we are quite very active together with all the entities that are in our stable in the implementation of outcome 14. This is our mandate as a department, which is to create an enabling environment for the provision of inclusive communication services to all South Africans in a manner that promotes socio-economic development and investment through broadcasting, new media, print media, and other new technologies, and brand the country locally and internationally. This mandate was taken straight from the from what the President has announced in May 2014. Our values are those ones, six, which are there, that we must ensure that the certainty of the policy environment, which will bring about investment into the sector. We ensure that the people that we have, they are able to perform their responsibilities to the maximum, ensuring that we also have our products and standards, this quality and integrity, and our ability to respond to matters swiftly, and also innovation, as we're in the space where innovation is the order of the day. This is our legislative mandate, where we drive our mandate from the Broadcasting Act, the Electronic Communications Act, the Independent Communications Authority Act, the Freedoms and Publication Board Act, and the MDDA Act. But we're also guided by the Public Service Act, and its as amended, and its regulations, the PFMA, also including its regulations. But also the we have got a component which talks to the matters of international issues relating to the international arrangements, especially on matters relating to the planning of radio frequencies use across the world. Lastly, the WIPO in terms of intellectual work that accrued as a result of us acquiring content exporting content or importing content all over the world. We have four goals that we have set for ourselves. Number one, a responsive communication policy and regulatory environment. Number two, set ourselves to improve government communication and country branding. And number three, effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration in the department, and in our entities. And then the last one is a transformed communication sector, especially in the print media sector. The next slide touches on the strategic goals in terms of how the objectives, how we are going to achieve that. On number one, improve capacity of development as entities to deliver. We'll implement efficient and effective strategic management processes in line with the relevant legislation and procurement. Provide guidance and oversight of the governance matters of SOEs on an ongoing basis. Monitor the implementation of communication planning policies by state-owned entities to ensure that the strategic alignment of development priorities by 31st March 2018. The one requirement in terms of the ECA, we will from time to time issue policy directions to ICASA, especially on matters that requires us to intervene where there's a market failure. And lastly, deals with the compliance matters of the entities so that they're able to discharge and submit the reports as required by the PFMA to Parliament. The next one talks to the responsive communication policy environment. We committed to conduct research in order to improve universal access and to broadcasting services by 31st March 2019. Also, conduct research and development of broadcasting policy and plan in order to ensure equitable allocation of spectrum to public, private, and community players. And also, lastly, as part of our international work, to develop broadcasting policy papers for international engagements at the ITU and WIPO. The last two focus on our approach to research, to conduct research and develop media policies in order to broaden access to information by all citizens, and also lastly, looking at the branding matters. You know, that comes as a result of that strategic goal. The last strategic goal, transformed communication sector. Our objective is to build a competitive communication industry through the implementation of targeted interventions to support the growth and development of the creative industries, manage digital migration program to ensure successful migration from analog to digital television in Africa within 2 years, and manage industry research and analysis on an ongoing basis to ensure that the department becomes the authoritative voice on the communication sector in terms of statistics. And the sector's contribution towards the GDP and economic activity. Lastly, it's our structured program of engagement with government institutions and our stakeholders so that we can leverage their support in support of the priorities of the department. The next slide deals with the performance level of the department. The DPME provides the framework for the level of performance that is applicable to quantitative and qualitative targets. In terms of the colors that we have used, green will indicate achieved targets. The target is achieved and is as planned and there is supporting evidence. Red indicates the targets are not achieved, but the targets could not be achieved, but there is some progress that has been made. But there is evidence. We avoided, Honorable Chair, to use the yellow color. I think the last time we were here, the committee indicated that I think you must indicate whether you have done it or not. I think we have avoided to be on the fence. So it's either done or not done. I think we have also learned from the AG on how they do their work in terms of auditing. So we have adopted that. As a department, we had 82 targets for 15-16 financial year. We've been able to achieve 52 of those. 30 targets were not achieved. This represents the 63% of performance by the department in 15-16, and we've overachieved in 5 of the planned targets. This is a graphical representation of what I've indicated. Indicating also the targets per each program. Program 1, which is our administration, at 43 targets, 29 were achieved, 14 were not achieved. I'll go into the details of each of these. Program 2, which is our policy unit, in the main they had 18, 5 were achieved and 13 were not achieved. Program 3, which is the industry research where our DTT program resides. They had 13 and we have achieved 11, 2 were not achieved. Program 4, entity oversight, they had 8, 7 were achieved and 1 was not achieved. So this is how the 82 has been divided across the various programs. The graphical representation again in terms of the number I spoke to, 63% of achievement and 37% of the things that we have not achieved. On the targets that we have exceeded, we had committed in 2015-16 that we will ensure that there is 235,000 set-top boxes produced. We were able to get 360 set-top boxes were produced, and this was delivered to the SAPO South African Post Office warehouses. We had also, as part of the outcome 14, that 55% of content reflects African perspective and cultural diversity. 60% of the South African content, you know, was found to be reflecting, as, you know, South African perspective and cultural diversity, as shown in the SABC in the main. Obviously, this will also improve for this year with the decision to go 90% local content. So we are anticipating that this will improve significantly. 53% of improvements of African national identity based on self-description. In here, we have been able to you know, get 65% of people who are describing themselves as African, South African first. I think there's a scientific studies that are done. I think GCIS assists in terms of getting these statistics. The other target of 35% South Africans reflecting pride to be South Africans. I think according to the Pride Index, 84% of South Africans indicate that they are proud to be South Africans. We have overachieved this. We have also committed to touch about 6.5 million TV-owning households with digital broadcasting awareness. And we've been able to touch almost 20 million people through various means of easy means of programs and the coverage of TV broadcast breakfast shows that were held with on Morning Live in the SABC. On Program 1, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this is where, as the Minister indicated, that we didn't have the capacity to fully operationalize the department as from the 1st of April you know, last year. But we have been able to work with the GCIS, and we were able to adopt the various policies that GCIS has, so that we are able to ensure that there is a system and procedure that we follow in whatever that we do. So we have been able to adopt the GCIS policies in the main. As a result of that, we signed an MOU between the DOC and GCIS, which allowed the officials to provide corporate services related to support to the DOC. Minister indicated earlier on that the CFO was the CFO of two departments, and the head of internal audit of GCIS was also providing such support to the DOC. In terms of the post, we had posts which were funded, 87, of which 65 were filled, and 22 were vacant, which represent 25% of the vacancy rate. And in terms of the equity, we, in at SMS level, we 40% of our SMS is females, and 60% is males at SMS level. We also have 3% of our employees who represent with the people with disabilities in our space. So the vacancy rate, as I indicated, was reduced from 52% to 25% during the period under review. As I indicated, the departmental HR policies and systems were developed and approved and implemented. Security clearance vetting process was done with the state security agency. Any person that we employ in the department goes through the security vetting process. And as a requirement, 2015-16-19-20 strategic plan was developed, and I think was tabled in Parliament. And quarterly performance reports on the implementation of the 2015-16 were submitted to TPME and National Treasury as per the requirement of the PFMA. The expenditure estimates of national expenditure and financial reports were compiled by the National Treasury in line with Section 40 of the PFMA, as I indicated. Risk and internal audit reports were compiled and submitted to the Audit and Risk Committee. So we do have a functional external audit committee with members. We also have, within the department, have an internal and risk committee, which is what I chair. and also a budget committee, which looked at all the budget-related matters. And as the AG has indicated, we have received a clean audit for the period under review. The challenges that we have experienced that are the things that we said we are going to do. Hopefully, at the time, we thought we were going to have our own building, but we could not procure our own building. We're still squatting at the GCIS due to financial constraints. We're also unable to implement the learnership and internship program because we're at our first year of operation. So we focused on prioritizing or filling posts for the core function of the department during the period under review. Coming to program two, which is our core, which is policy and research and development, we had committed to conduct broadcasting policy review and develop a green paper and white paper on broadcasting policy for South Africa for cabinet approval. Our achievement for this during this period, that a draft green paper was finalized and approved by MEMCO, and the review of the broadcasting policy was done. So we could not take this through cabinet processes because we were still in the consultation phase, consultation phase. I must say to the committee that we are ready to finalize consultation within the government system. Our second commitment was around the Broadcasting Amendment Bill that will be drafted, approved by Cabinet, and enacted into law. Indeed, the Broadcasting Amendment Bill was approved by Cabinet, but it is yet to be enacted into law. However, it has been introduced into Parliament in November last year. It still has to be processed by the committee. The next one talks to the ICASA Amendment Bill that drafted, approved, and cabinet approved by cabinet and enacted into law. Again, the bill was done. As remember, there's a MOU signed between the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Telecoms. Anything that we have to do around the CASA amendment, we have to consult TPS. At the time, the TPS was working on the policy review, so we could not process the bill through to cabinet. So we have postponed this to the 2016-17 financial year once all policy processes have been concluded. We also committed to finalize community broadcasting support strategy developed and approved. This was done, published, we've consulted on it. It's yet to go to cabinet for approval, it's ready. So we should be able to take it to cabinet for approval during this financial year, 16-17 financial year. We have also committed to do two broadcasting policy papers produced for international engagements, as I indicated in the ITU and WIPO. This was done as per the commitment we've made. We've also committed to do research on broadcasting radio frequency spectrum dividend policy and the policy developed. And I must say here, the research was done. There is an entire chapter in the draft green paper that we have currently, which touches on the issues on how do you tackle spectrum going forward to ensure that there's continuity of broadcasting services in the country. So this chapter is there, and I think it will be consulted on. The next one talks to our work around DTT in terms of the set-top boxes that have been produced. I already touched on this one. I think we've done quite fairly well here. Is the work that we do together with other entities, Centec, South African Post Office, USASA, who are really assisting us in terms of showing that there are boxes on the ground. We have also committed to do 5 community radio stations, giving them infrastructure. This has been achieved. We also are committed to do the Freedom of Publication Bill drafted, enacted into law by Parliament. This was not achieved, but the bill has been introduced to Parliament, and I think the this committee is processing the bill as we speak. We have committed to develop a national communication policy and get it approved by Cabinet. This is the work that we are working with the GCIS. This policy has been done, has been approved, has been consulted. I think my colleague Donald will also add what is left now is only for it to go through to Cabinet, because the Fosat Menko, the Forum of DGs Menko, has approved it to go to Cabinet. So we should be able to go to Cabinet before the end of the financial year. The next one that we committed ourselves was to develop a media transformation policy and approved by Cabinet. We could not finalize the media transformation policy as we committed. However, we were able to develop a discussion paper on media transformation, which we have shared with the industry at the colloquium that we held in August this year. So this year we'll be able to finalize the policy and consult before the end of the financial year. The other commitment we've made was to develop a position paper on media development diversity. We were unable to this was not achieved. The paper was not developed. And it's going to be part of the implementation of the media transformation policy. There's a whole chapter that talks to media development and diversity in the discussion document that I spoke to earlier on. We've also committed to do in the MDDA amendment bill, approved by Cabinet and enacted into law. The bill was developed and we processed in the 2016-17 financial year. The next one talks to the support to implementation of the 20 community media projects. This was done, so we were able to achieve this in full. The next one that we committed on was to the community media support strategy developed and adopted. The strategy was not developed as indicated. This was put on hold because, as I indicated, there's a whole chapter that is going to be included in the broadcasting policy review process. What you see there's audio-visual digital content policy is the broadcasting policy review process. So there's a whole chapter that talks to the community media. The last one under this program, talks to the Brand South Africa bill, because as it is now, Brand South Africa is governed by Board of Trustees, so we wanted to have a bill that governs the governance matters of Brand South Africa. So the bill was developed, so we could not submit it to Cabinet, so the bill will process it during the 2016-17 financial year. The classification that has been achieved, so we didn't have difficulties there. The next one talks to the three broadcasting and communication policies legislation approved and implemented. This has got has to talk to the fact that we could not do the broadcasting amendment bill, and also the policy was unable to finalize the communication policy. So we were unable to achieve this target during the period under review. We had also committed as a carryover from the old DOC to finalize the audio digital content development strategy. This was done and developed and presented to the economic cluster. A decision was taken that this will form part of the policy review process. It can't be a standalone, so there's a whole chapter that talks to the work that we are doing here around audiovisual content strategy. So there's a chapter that talks to the whole issues about audiovisual content in the policy. Now, coming now to program three, industry research and analysis. As I indicated, this is what we've been able to achieve. I'm not going to dwell much into that. Safe to say that the GCIS National Quantitative Tracker Study is the one that formed the initial base of the work that we do. There's a scientific way of how we track this performance in these various areas. So again, the other one, I already touched on this one, which is on the outcome 14. Safe to say that the, as Minister indicated, we have been able to appoint members to serve in the South African Broadcast Production Advisory Body, which is a requirement in terms of Broadcasting Act. So they've already met. The chairperson and the deputy chairperson have been appointed, and the program of action has been developed, and I think the work is continuing quite well. The last one on this slide talks to the installer training program as part of installation of the set-top boxes across the country. And we've been able to work in partnership with ELIS and TPS so that we're able to train people to do installation, especially in the SKA area. We had committed to migrate from analog to digital broadcasting, ensure that we've got four quarterly reports in digital migration from analog to digital, which are compiled. This was done, and I must say we're able to track this because we have established a digital migration program office, which is really assisting us to perform on this important function. We have committed to touch 6.5 TV owning households. I think we have been able to report on this one. We have done quite very well in this regard. The area that we've been less successful is on the quarterly reports showing consumer access to digital broadcasting. We have been able to do three reports. In the main, the registration process started only in November, and the distribution only started in December 2015. And as a result, only one report for the last quarter was developed. We could not have done the reports in the earlier quarters because we have not yet started the distribution of the set-top boxes during those quarters. We have also committed to do two industry research reports. This has been done. So there was no difficulty. We've been able to achieve this. So the next one touched on our intergovernmental relations framework. We do have a framework that has been approved by MENCO, and we are implementing it, and reports are being compiled by the team. And also we've committed to adopt one stakeholder engagement framework. This has been done, and we is the one that we use in the main to run our EZINBIZO programs and all that is happening in the DTT program office. And also we have also committed to two international engagement strategy. There is a policy that we've done. This has been achieved. There are no difficulties there. And the next one touch on the entity oversight unit, which is in the main where the almost 94% of our budget form part of transfer to the entities. So I think I must say here we have developed what you call an entity oversight model policy, which guides the work that we do, as the minister has indicated, and the governance structures that the minister spoke about, the bilateral engagement between the minister and the board chairs of the boards, and also the structure that I chair, which is the DG CEOs Forum. Minister touched also on the CFOs Forum, which is governed by this policy. and the audit forum and the company secretary's forum that we have established. So I think things are moving quite well in this program. We have committed to do four quarterly entity oversight reports submitted to the executive authority. We've been able to do this on a quarterly basis. We 100% implementation of performance agreement management system of ICASA chairpersons and councillors. Performance agreements were developed, but they were not signed. We have endeavored to get this done for the 2016-17 financial year. We have also committed to look at the Presidential Review Committee on SOEs analyzed, look at the implication on our sector. This has been done. And, we're implementing some of the recommendations. The entity oversight policy framework touches on some of the things that the report has touched on that we're implementing. We have also committed to do a review of six entity shareholder compacts, accountability arrangement, and six implementation monitoring reports. This has been done. And I must say here, the law requires that the minister to sign shareholder compact with the SABC only, but as a way of trying to bring governance matters, we have introduced, even if in the entities where we don't have to sign shareholder compacts, to sign governance instruments which governs the relationship between the minister and the entities. And I think we have received quite good support from the entities. Those have been done, have been signed, and we're implementing those governance instruments. We've also committed to facilitate reports on the funding request by entities, and I think we're doing this, and whenever they request the money, they go via the department, and we also support them when we go to the processes at the National Treasury. We have committed also to do two reports on alignment of entities and strategies to departmental priorities and compiled. This has been done. We have achieved this, and I think we continue to do very well even this financial year. We have also committed to compile two monitoring reports on the performance and regulatory institutions and issue post directions as and when required. This was done, but we have not been able to issue a directive to ICASA during the period under review. But we have been able to do reports in terms of the compliance by the regulatory institutions, meaning ICASA and the FPB. Review of funding entities and reports compiled, we have been able to do this. But I think a critical one to mention here is the work that we are doing with the SABC in particular. On the review of the funding model of the SABC going forward. We also had a session with the minister and the board around this subject, beginning of this financial year, so that we can be able to find an optimal funding model for the regulator, as it were. So that's the non-financial performance of the department. This slide just recaps what I've already presented. And I must say that we've been able to achieve 63% of the planned targets. And some of the things we couldn't do because we couldn't acquire our own building. And I think we'll continue to monitor the targets we've not been able to achieve in the 2015-16 financial year during this year. But we have made good progress in establishing ourselves, but we still require support in that regard. I will now hand over to the CFO to do the presentation on the financial performance of the department. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Over to you, CFO.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members, Minister and Deputy Minister, and colleagues. In terms of financial performance of the department for the last financial year. The department had a total budget of 1.2 billion, of which administration had 48 million, and they spent the whole 48 million. Program 2 had 7.2 million, they spent 4.8 million. Program 3, they had 20 million, they spent the whole 20 million. And the entity oversight, all the money was transferred to entities. The under expenditure in Program 2, honorable members, you will realize that as the DG was doing the presentation, there are a lot of targets that are in red in Program 2 because the consultation process that has to be done on the bills and whatever couldn't go on. And as a result, it's resulted in a lot of underspending in terms of that program. This is just to show you how we have done them in terms of the financial statement position. And in a graphical format, we have shown that what is the total expenditure for Program 1. You could see the expenditure and the budget are more or less on the same lines. In all Program 1, Program 2, and Program 2, you can see slightly shallow there. The budget is very small. And this Program 2 and Program 3 and Program 4 are the core functions of the department, but their budget are very small because of capacity challenges that we have and the shortage of funding to establish the department properly to deliver on its mandate. These are the budget for the department. We are saying it's 1.2 billion, including what we are transferring to entities. But the Department of Communication, as it is, the total budget to run the department is only 80 million in the last financial year. And out of that 80 million, 48 million went to Program 1, 7 to Program 2, 20 million to Program 3, basically to fund the DTT project, and the balance is for entity oversight to make sure that the entities run their functions properly, which is only 4 million in terms of the administration support we are giving to entities. In terms of economic classification, compensation of employees budget was 48 million and we have spent 47 million. As you have seen on the slides that was presented on the vacancy rates, there's 22% of the posts that were not filled, and as a result, it has an impact on the spending on the compensation of employees. On goods and services, we had 30 million, but we have only spent 28 million. As a result of Program 2 that couldn't do all what it was required to do because of the approval processes that are very long to be completed. And the transfer payments were done. The capital budget was only 1.5 and the whole money was spent. And that is the graphical presentation of the economic classification, how the department has spent the money. And this is the classification without the transfers that shows how we are spending the money as a department, the 48 million, the 20 million, and the smallanyana part that we have. The 1.2 billion that we have, we said it's very proper that we can show you even in the outer years how the department is being funded. The DOC is only having 80 million in. It was having 80 million in 15 and 16. In 16 and 17, it was given only. We expected 77, but we were only given 75 million. And the other years, we are expecting 90 and 105. That is how the growth has been estimated. So there is no way in the near future that DOC will be able to be fully established. As the minister was saying, that the total establishment is 400 people, but we are only having 95 people currently in terms of the structure that are operating in the department. So our MOU with GCIS is is renewed on quarterly basis to ensure that we are able to run the services. And these are the allocation over the MTEF to our entities in terms of how we expect their plans to be aligned to this amount over the MTEF period. Honorable Chair, in terms of the audit outcome, I won't go much because the Auditor General has already presented. We had a clean audit, however, they are following internal controls. As you have listened, the AG said that there were internal control issues that need to be attended to, that even though you have a clean audit, but you still have to look at the, some of the internal controls that need to be done. So in terms of the AG, there were issues in terms of the approved operating procedures that need to be put in place, especially in the core function that is in Program 2 and Program 3, which we have put an action plan and those standard operating procedures have been developed. There was also a question that we must be able to document the performance indicators in terms of the annual performance plan so that they are well defined. What basically said is that, an example is that when we say we are going to develop two stakeholder engagement, we must be specific in terms of what are we focusing on in terms of stakeholder engagement, so that when they come to audit, we must not give them anything that we have developed, but it must be what we have planned to do at the beginning of the year. And some of the targets need to be supported by reliable evidence. We had some challenges in relation to the targets that basically were coming from SABC because they are driven by surveys that need to be done and technical report that need to be submitted. It was a challenge in terms of getting the reliable evidence that can be audited, and it's something that we need to look at and improve in that one. We had an issue in terms of the disclosure of the accruals notes in the financial statement that need to be taken care of, because that is one of the areas that the corrections were done and accepted by the auditors before the audit could be done. So it means in terms of the controls, we need to improve to make sure that in the next financial year, the AG can't find anything in terms of the accruals management. But honorable members, this is the process we are doing manually. And it's quite a lengthy process that we have committed ourselves that we will see how best can we put it in the system so that we avoid the manual process of dealing with that. And we hope that in this current financial year, our records will be clean. There was issue on the notes of the fixed asset register not reconciling properly with the disclosure note on the AFS, which were corrected. And the auditors accepted the corrections at that, hence the clean audit. But we felt it's an area that we need to improve the controls and look at them. How do we do our assets verification process and updating of the asset register? And we have developed an action plan to deal with that matter to ensure that our asset register is properly updated so that we can do proper disclosure at the end of the financial year. The other element that they have touched on was the risk assessment that need to be performed in terms of Treasury Regulation 3.2.1. We have already said we have signed the MOU with GCIS. So some of the corporate services risk that we have done them as per GCIS environment that we are operating in. But there is a need to look at the bigger risk assessment for the organization that we have to do in terms of this Treasury regulation, and that is the process that will be done in the current financial year. The user access controls need to proper management and controls. This was the issue of the segregation of the functions on the IT function, which was corrected, and it's now happening in a proper manner. The areas that the AG focused in terms of performance audit was Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4. And all of them, they were unqualified in terms of the audit. We are aware that the auditors are not yet issuing an opinion on these matters that affect the financials. But as moving forward in preparation for that, They've given us an unqualified opinion in terms of the management report, and we believe we can improve given the necessary mechanism we have put now in place. What we are doing now is when we have developed the first draft of the APP, we send it to the audit committee, even to the auditors, to make their comments so that we incorporate their comments before we could do the final APP for submission to Parliament. So we hope that will improve in terms of the smartness of the targets in the future, and we won't be found wanting when we get audited. And this is the slide to show all the entities and how we have performed as the group of the DOC. And I think the AG has elaborated on the matter. I don't have to waste much of your time, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thanks, CFO. That's how the presentation goes. I'll give members a chance to ask questions. If I may start here, Honorable Tolashe, Kongubele, Van Skalvig, Tsedi, Van Dijk, Drachen, Machoba, Matisha, in that order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. First and foremost, Honorable Chairperson, I need to thank the Minister on the way she has just presented a political overview, in your view, Chairperson, on how politically is leading the department. But also to say her strategy did bear fruit, especially, for instance, on the issue of the CFO forums. Because to an extent it did give some relief into some areas that were really critical insofar as the department is concerned. For instance, the CFO forums took the most sick baby, that is the SABC, in the family. It has taken it somewhere, and although it is not yet there, but there is a lot of progress that has been recorded. I think we must congratulate on her wisdom in leading the department such that immediately there was that kind of a progress that is positive that is being recorded. We hope with that wisdom going forward she'll be able, in when she comes back to the committee, by that time she'll be reporting 100% of everybody having to get this. But also, Chair, we'll be failing if we don't thank the CFO that was there, that was servicing everybody else, such that you are getting this kind of a report. We really want to thank the gentleman to be really, really this capable and really be so loyal to this government. We know sometimes people are working under very difficult circumstances, however, and in some areas we hear people talking about that only and not really giving the output that is positive. We really want to thank those people. But we want to say Malbongwe to now the CFO that is presenting this such a brilliant report. It's a Malbongwe, Honorable DG. There isn't much I can do about it. It's a Malbongwe issue. You put a woman when things need to be done. Same applies to the Minister. Chair, I am a little bit worried. I want to hear the department talking to me about the posts that are not funded. With my little knowledge, I suspect that might have negative findings from the AG's report. And if yes, how best can we deal with that? Because for me, they are being penalized for the sins that really don't belong to them. How best can we deal with that matter? To say when a post is not funded, I don't know how minister will know with her understanding and the wisdom as the leader of the department and political head, how best working with the AG's office to put those so that you don't have these negative findings on the issue that are beyond your control. But also that talks to the issue of the underfunded new department. See, I'm not sure how we can assist in this regard. For me, more than a department, this is a special project for the sitting president of the Republic, because if you read the founding documents of this department, Chair, it was established a little bit late, and it had huge mandates to implement. But it is worries us if consistently we get to hear that it is also underfunded. I think there's inconsistency there, and something must be done. And the sooner we really hold hands in making sure that we do that, because we don't want to establish a department yesterday and 2 days down the line already we are all fighting in the House because the department is unable to implement its mandate, not because it doesn't want to or it's not capable to, but it is being underfunded. We know the difficulties on finances, but I think the government needs to prioritize some of things. You know, you can't treat this department like your once upon a time Department of Health and your Department of Education. Historically, they've been there, they'll be forever there, we all know and accept. But I think we need to move, because here, this is where you see the actual transformation, where our people begin to benefit from the freedom that they fought for all these years. See, it is nice when you see people in the most rural areas around Northern Cape celebrating because they can watch TV. Something that where we are seated, it's not a farce. Oh, what's the farce? For them, it's something big because for the first time they're able to watch the TV. Therefore, we need to do something. I will share with you where you are seated, you can assist in this regard. Chair, thank you. I really also want to... I won't come back, Chair. I'm happy with the MOU that has been signed between the department and the GCIS. I think also it does bear fruit. Also, we really want to congratulate that idea because it is quite assisting in this regard. However, the most sick baby in the house, unfortunately, Minister, everybody will concentrate into small things that is problematic and sometimes ignore huge things and positive things that has happened. So the department must get to understand that SABC is a matter, therefore it needs to deal with as soon as possible. I also have noted that on the issues where we could not achieve, it's not because you didn't want or you didn't try, but there are a lot of stakeholders that you are working with, and sometimes there are the people who sometimes, in lack of the nice word, frustrating the process. I see that there are many policies that have been developed, but they are at the level where it's not now your problem, but it's a problem of, in most cases, of further consultation. I hope this can be addressed so that, for me, Chairperson, this department doesn't have more than 5 years to achieve its total mandate. For us to be able to say we've done something for our people, I think the department must really be able to say in 5 years, when the term ends, we must be able to say, indeed, we put a department in place, it has been able to establish itself, linked, properly funded. The last one, the building. I'm not sure here, Chair. I think some department like Public Works, I don't know how the government work, but I don't think you can be appointed and be asked to be a department and be left alone to look for yourself, where you must operate, where you must be employed, all that. I think that's a very huge now mandate. Because as you are trying to establish yourself, there are time frames of everything else. But I think in this regard, some departments must be brought into the play so that they can really fast-track this process, because it really sometimes undermines the achievements that the department has managed to do when you also say, but also we don't have a space to operate from. So where do these capable officials, where are they operating from? Because the reports that you are getting, they are quite capable. So it's quite an embarrassing kind if it cannot be written, but you must write it because it's a reality. But I'm saying it needs to be addressed, Honorable Chairperson. With the CFO's report, I think I'm quite happy. She has alluded on everything else, and indeed she has been very honest to say why they were unable to implement in some areas. But my last worry is that the administration budget is quite huge for the actual mandate of the department. It might not be the problem of the department, but I am very worried because we are not here to employ and do everything. At the end, we need to implement the policy directions that the minister pronounced on when she was doing her budget speech. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Talash. Maybe at some stage as government, we need to just to audit properties that we have as government against what we spend on rentals. Maybe we need to do that because I guess we spend a lot of money on renting properties for officers. Maybe we just need to do that. Honorable Kungbela.
thank you, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to elaborate in echoing what my colleague has said on a demonstration that there's a lot of people who are hard at work. And also, without over elaborating, that it will take one elephant or a cub to mess up that. And I think he has already spoken about that elephant, which is SAPC. I think up front, what I want to commend, Minister, your management for and your leadership is the respect for the significance of performance information. I can tell you, if you sort that thing out, you will spend very little on risk management. Because actually, you will find that if you get close to issues of management, there's a relationship between the proportion you spend in risk management and the quality of your performance information. Because your performance information helps to minimize risk expenditure, because risk expenditure is about dealing with issues that can easily disappear in the process of executing your mandate and cause particular consequences, lead to consequences that you wouldn't want. But when your performance information is good, you've got a nice mirror to prevent a lot of consequences which need you to spend on risk. But having said that, I just want to say a minor comment on your alignment on strategic goals with your strategic objectives. Your strategic goals in terms of results, it's my submission that they are properly articulated. But the objectives, instead of articulating a state that you want to realize, they articulate actions. Then they fail the quality test of being strategic objectives. Although it is understood what you want to achieve, but the language is very, very important to be properly. Again, there's also an issue of alignment between you've got your four strategic goals, am I correct? And you've got your list of strategic objectives. Again, the language consistency If you look at your four strategic goals, number one is taken to be a heading of your objectives somewhere, as it is. Number two also does the same when you elaborate on your strategic objectives, is taken as it is. And the number four is done. The problem I have is number three. Number three, you are saying effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, administration, but when you come here, elaborating on your strategic objectives, you speak of something different in terms of language. I'm not sure if we're together. Where suddenly now you speak of, what is it, capacity. This thing is confusing. The way it's written. It's not your, I was told this, I want to change here. You speak of improved capacity of the department and its entities. But somewhere else, you've got a particular language. And I'm saying, it undermines your pursuit of credible performance information. Because the way it is now, it gives a leeway for you to mean something different when we actually engage on evaluation, during evaluation. It's just, it's not a major thing. I'm saying, in talking about deeper language, it may mean the same thing, but the purpose, it is important that let's use uniform or to call language. The other thing I'm interested...
Just hold there. I'm not sure, are you following?
Okay. Yes. Now, the other thing I'm curious about, HOD and the minister, is the narrative of 90%. Now, 90% to me cannot be questioned, the purpose. But I'm curious to know the balance between that and the business purpose of the institution. That is supposed to be self-supportive. So as we implement it, to which extent that do we analyze those, to analyze the interest and the preference of the audience? Because in my view, over time, this is just unresearched. I have a fear of a situation where over time, you might find yourself losing audience to other institutions that sustain what you have changed. I'm curious to get that. But the issue of SABC, the Auditor General spoke of a persisting, irregular, and wasteful expenditure for years now, not just 1 year. It's not good for the reputation of the SABC whatsoever. And I know this patronizing, something I'm passionately revengeful about. There's this argument that, no, we're bringing a lot of money to SAPC. Shut up and be thankful. Don't ask us other questions, what happens to that money. All you must do is just be grateful, a lot of money is coming to SAPC. But a lot of other reports by AG explain that nothing surpasses proper governance, proper corporate governance. Because the fact that 3%, let me say that 3%, which I've not analyzed, is true. This is an institution of government, SABC. That 97% investor, that set of investors who are doing that 97%, are entitled to be happy about SABC, that 97%. They are entitled to be happy about how SABC spends money. And the laws that govern how SABC should spend money reside with government. And the mandate to check the implementation of those laws reside with government. So in other words, when we interrogate SABC, we're doing it on behalf, not just of the 3%, we're doing on behalf of those who are investing in our entity, which is SABC. And there is a big relationship that cannot be separated between good corporate governance and deliver. Because there is a tendency to say, shut up, if we have constructed the bridge, so why do you want to know how processes were done and so on? But what we find that good corporate governance measures are as a result of delivery defects. Had there been no delivery defects, there would not have been measures for good corporate governance. The problem is that the defects in delivery dictated that there be good corporate governance. And therefore, we must, from SABC Minister and the leadership, our strong appeal, this language that tends to come to some of the officials in SABC, that we have given you money, we've brought a lot of money. I'm using my own words now, I'm paraphrasing, shut up. It's a very, very patronizing attitude. And it's disrespectful, it's derogatory. It amounts to disrespect that cannot be measured. And I'm saying we need to deal with that. AG says for not less than 5 years, this has been happening. Irregular expenditure is not always, you may find that 100% of that irregular expenditure has got nothing to do with corruption. You may find that. But what we need to get, like what one of the colleagues was asking, detailed audits, what we need to get is, in each year, you remember when you look at the irregular expenditure, you need to go and explain until there's condonation. We need to know, over 5 years, what percentage of those irregular expenditure pass the test of credible condemnation, so that we can be able to know what is it that we are dealing with from the possible point of, from the possibility of there being corruption. So what I'm saying is that I insist, we don't want to hear this language, which is disrespectful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm very broadly covered by the previous speakers. But looking at the 63% of targets achieved, in 5% of the targets that has been overachieved versus your money that has been spent, it's a bit problematic for me. But in the same breath, I think we are so I'm one of the people emphasizing a service delivery to our people. And it's really a breath of fresh air to hear that 5% of over-expenditure included the distribution of set-top boxes to our poor communities, where majority of the people who benefited in this instance were from the Northern Cape, where I am from. So I'm really glad in this instance. I've witnessed it. I've witnessed the joy it brought to the hearts of those people, and it's immeasurable in this instance. So I'm not going to speak to the poor performance in terms of Program 2, because what I've seen is that there's a lot of work that has been done towards the achievement. So I'm sure that in the next financial year, we'll see a great deal of improvement in this area. What I want to speak about is in terms of the five community radio stations that have been assisted in terms of broadcasting infrastructure. We know that Rome is not built in one day, so at least there's steps towards doing something. But I just need some clarification in terms of how those radio stations that were mentioned were identified, because we need to make sure that at some stage the benefit is spread across the provinces in terms of beneficiation. When looking at the vacancy rate, although it's been decreased to 25%, I've looked at the annual report, the detailed report, and I've seen that there is a been made mention of additional employees to the number of 25. Can you please clarify where those people are coming from? I don't have a problem with them, but I need to know if they are employed. They are not permanent employees. They are additional employees. Are they employed on fixed-term contracts, and what is actually going on there? If we are saying that the vacancies are underfunded and we're sitting with a vacancy rate of 25%, are you planning on absorbing those people in the near future? And I just need an update on when we speak about the vacancy rate, about it is important to me that the department, although it's stable in terms of the audit outcomes in the performance and delivery, we need to see at some stage soon, Minister, that the pulse of the DG and DDG is full. Can we please get an update on how far that process is? Thank you.
Let me join my colleagues who already commended you, Minister, and the departments for the good story that was presented this morning that led to GCIS consequently getting clean audit, the department, Brand South Africa, FPB, CASA, unqualified, and with only SABC still being qualified with only one matter of emphasis. And I want to make a concrete proposal on the challenge that has already been raised, Chair. The challenge of lack of funding. Because it's an issue that we have always been talking about, I don't know since when. And I'm linking it with the report which says only 0.022% of the money that was allocated could not be spent, which to me is a good story. Because more often people talk about lack of funding, but when they're given money, money is not spent. Here we're talking about 0.022% of money that could not be spent. So it's almost everything that was given to Jordan, which is really a very good story. I think the time has arrived, Chair, for ourselves as politicians to take the matter up with the political head. Because it can't be right that a very strategic department like this one we continue to talk about the challenge of underfunding. I think at some stage we'll have to invite the treasurer to come and deal with this particular challenge. That's my first concrete proposal. The second one relates to the issue of the shareholder compacts that Minister, you are entering with. You are saying in terms of legislation, you only do that with the SABC, but now you have extended it to the rest of the entities. It might be very useful for ourselves, so that as we do or conduct oversight, we know exactly what is it that has been agreed upon between yourself and these entities, so that as we conduct oversight, we know exactly that this entity says, by the end of this quarter, we would have done this. So if it's not done, we must then be able to hold all of them accountable ourselves as well over the work that we are doing. So I'm saying maybe we need those compacts to be made available to us as well so that we are then able to track progress. In my other committee, people are saying there is what we call dashboards or whatever. And I keep on asking myself, if we have such instruments, why do you continue to have problems when there are these instruments that you can from time to time check progress and challenges and the like. So all I'm saying is maybe let's agree that those compacts need to be made available to us as politicians, so that as we call these entities, we are then able to say, you said you will do this, and you did not do it. Linked to that one is the issue that was raised earlier by the AG, lack of consequence management. Because more often we talk about people who have transgressed and not necessarily and say less about people who did not perform. If I'm an employee, I've entered into a contract with the employer, and I'm saying by the end of this quarter, this is what I would have done. If it's not done, what happens? Because it must not only wait for a person to contribute to a fruitless expenditure, then that you call that person and say, yeah, there's a problem. Even if a person did not perform in terms of what he or she said I'll do at the end of the quarter, that person somehow need to come and account. So all I'm saying is we might have to tighten this particular area of consequence management over and above the issue of transgressions. I'm talking about performance management system in summary. The second last one is your report, DG, which says we are at 3% for people living for people with disabilities. It's a good story, I agree. But I'm interested in the level at which these people are deployed or are found. Because it can't be right that we have this kind of a report only for compliance purposes. At some stage, I'll appreciate if we have some of these people at positions of responsibility, so that they are also able to influence police direction in the department, unlike them being there at these very lower positions, where they are not able to influence any direction in terms of where the department is going. The last one, Chair, is a very good report which says you are targeted to have 35% people, 35% of South Africans being proud about the country. And the report says you are at 84%, which is a very good story, and I will assume that in the main, it's this work is taking place at the level of Brand South Africa. I think we must really commend Brand South Africa if that is the work that we have managed to do in that particular area. Because more often, a lot of things that are being said about this country, as perpetuated by the media, is not correct. So this report says you are then able to clarify from time to time that this is the correct picture of what is happening in the country, leading to us having 84% of people being proud about the country. With your Vukuzenzela newsletter, more than 366,000 or so something copies produced, which is fine. But all I'm saying is I'm also concerned about the distribution of these copies. Because I'll appreciate a situation where if I were to go to one village in the most rural area and go to a shop there, I'm able to get a copy of this newsletter. So I'm saying we can achieve this thing if we're then able to enter into partnerships of some sort with municipalities. Because to me, it's not enough to say we'll produce these copies, put them as strategic places in municipalities where not everybody is able to go. So I'm saying as to produce these copies, let's also make sure that we are able to take them down to where this where people are. Thanks.
Those were the hands. There's more. There's more.
Chair.
No, just before that. I see your hand there, Honorable Binda. Honorable Madisha, is your hand down? No, I'm just asking if...
It was asked, and I think you did recognize that.
So that I don't go back
to...
Okay. To members.
All right.
I'll start with you and then come back to others.
Okay. Thank you very much. That small department has not used consultants, I think is positive. We are quite happy about that, which means work has got to be done by yourselves, and that is quite good. We welcome that. That you don't have offices, but you are operating from wherever, you have been is positive. We welcome that. My few problems are both yourself, Bamsanda, and the COO. You'll have to help me there. Yeah, well, that position. You both have put on the table the point that you have not succeeded. You are not performing in a number of other areas. I think you need to take that further and actually explain. Is that, number one, in line with that which appears on page 10-11, the issue of the staff, etc.? Why are you not employing staff, and yet you have been given the finances to do that? I think we need to understand that, because in my own opinion, that has not been explained. I've not heard you actually explain that. And then, don't you think that that non-employment is one of the issues that lead to what you yourself what you yourself have said is a lack of performance. In your closing remarks, that is exactly what you said. You said lack of performance. To quote you, in particular areas. Mamsand, I think you did say it as well. So both of you have indicated that you are lacking in so far as performance is concerned. I therefore am saying, don't you think that your having been given those particular resources, but you're not using those particular resources to do that which has been given to you, employ people, etc., is actually contributing to the failures, as you yourselves have put it.
Thank you. Honorable Mbinda, I'll come to
I was identifying those who didn't speak last round. Honorable Mbenda?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Yeah, mine is just a small question, more especially around the performance information. I understand that they may not be able to answer, maybe, because it's age, because I'm just concerned, but performance information, it deals more with the service delivery, and you are sitting at 63, and then 37% is not achieved. I understand maybe the obstacles, but at the same time, I wonder, in your, I don't know, maybe you will, or maybe someone else will assist you. When is AG expressing an opinion on e-performance? Because, you see, it was some time ago when we were told that the focus now will not only be on finance, more especially with the government, it will be on performance information. I know it is not your job, but if you were to, if this was an opinion expressed, obviously you would be, you would have been sitting in a very difficult situation. I will not report, you also repeat what the other honorable member has said, more especially about looking at the performance versus your spending. Obviously, you see, they don't talk to one another as if really you have done everything well. Then on the issue of the vacancy rate, I understand that you have reduced it from 53 to 25. But at the same time, I'm trying to understand, because I don't see it as one of your targets. But you are saying you have reduced it to 25. In your opinion, what do you think should be the acceptable or the norm? If there was a target, obviously, it will be easy for me to refer you to the targets. And I'm also very happy, more especially when it comes to the issue of the your, even if we have not seen it, I know it is a management tool, your action plans, but they were echoed by Auditor General that there are action plans. And then on this issue of wasteful and fruitless expenditure, if some of these entities, I could see that you have about seven, at least six of them have done well, and then there is only one. Even that one, at least, it's not very bad. It's not a disclaimer or something to that effect, SAPC, you see, with all the challenges that they have. But on wasteful and fruitful expenditure, are there any consequences, you know, because wasteful and fruitless is not the same like irregular. Irregular is related to compliance, obviously, in doing your procurements. It's either your tax certificates or whatever. But I'm not saying that is acceptable, but on wasteful and fruitless expenditure, are there any consequences to the culprits? I think that is all on my side.
Thanks. Honorable Machoba.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Acting DG and others, for the good report we are receiving now. Besides to rebellize my tongue for negativity, this is a true reflection of service delivery to our nation. But in terms of performance in 2015 and 2016, the work was achievable, but the red must be reduced down to zero. In coming years. And to Chair, this department, there is a capacity to do a work. And for that matter, in terms of service delivery,
In terms of capacity, Chair, we are clapping our hands. My question, I don't have much more question more than I want to know about the sector boxes that were delivered to all support branches. Is that those sector boxes is to all or to all provinces? Currently, what's happening now in terms of those sector boxes? Because what I know, that is our community benefit to get peace jobs. Lastly, my question, I think it's not a question more than a request, a humble request to the minister. In terms of radio stations, I remember Ikukuletu was applying for radio license long time ago. And the response says there's a limited number of the frequencies. I will appeal to you, Minister, with my humble, to have a final say to assist Ikukuletu to have that license. Because it's a due matter in our community, because they need that a license to have the radio station. Chair, let me stop now because some of the issues was raised by my colleagues. I can't repeat it. Thank you so much.
Honorable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chair. Page 22, the issue of the set-up boxes that were delivered to the SAPU warehouses. I just want to, again, get clarity where it was budgeted for that and what the financial implication of that is. And on the setup boxes, I'm also from Northern Cape, so I can agree that I'm glad for everyone receiving an allocation. But there's also questions that arose around that. There's local people that are asking why our contractors from outside provinces are giving contracts in areas where there are local people to do the installations. And they would like to know how this process is conducted, and the Northern Cape, these people, the installers, they feel that they are being left out in this process, and they would like to, they say when these the people experience problems, they must come and do the after service for these people. And also with regards to the TV, the radio licenses, which was just mentioned, there's a moratorium on the licenses of community radios for more or less a year. And I would like to know why, and because there was also questions addressed to me with regards to that. And what does the law say, what is the time frame for such a moratorium? Then I want to refer to page 15, where it is said that a total number of funded posts was 87, of which 65 were filled and 22 vacant. We received on 15 March a documentation that for the same program one set that 88, the department currently has 88 funded posts on its approved establishment, and 55 of these were filled, 26 are still vacant, and 25 have been employed additional to the establishment. I want to know what happened to that 25 employees, or are they still being accommodated? And then I also want to know if the department is using consultants, and if they can just clarify goods and services for me. And the last one is that I want to refer to this page 29, and I must disagree with my colleague, Mr. Tedi, on this one, we It is said that domestic perception studies were conducted and resulted in 84% pride index. I want to know, how is the target set in the first place? And if it can be explained to us how this survey was conducted, how do you meet these, and then especially if you consider the news highlights, I wonder if this is a true reflection. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentations. I'm looking at the annual report, the HR portion. If I didn't see it on the PowerPoint presentation that people with disabilities are at 3%, if I look at the annual report, I see a lot of zeros. I would really like in the annual report to highlight the percentage, what number of people with disabilities are employed. And I have a number of questions related to that. Page 75 of the annual report, for example, 3.2, the profile of employees whose positions are upgraded due to their posts being upgraded, in that term we see people with disabilities are at zero. So are there no disabled people being upgraded? So that's my one question. And if you go to 78, page 78, employment equity, the total number of employees, including people with disabilities in each column. So if it's including, then there's no breakdown. So then I see it's at zero. How many people with disabilities are there? I can't see that from the annual report. Page 80, 3.35.4. The same thing with 3.35.6. Promotion and terminations. People with disabilities are at zero, so just a question on why that is the case. And then 3.38, skills development. For that period, people with disabilities are at zero. So were there no skills development given to people with disabilities? Those are the numbers I would like to see, and we need to improve on the numbers because when we look at it, we see nothing but the presentation says 3%. But in the annual report, it's not clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Those are the questions. I think the staff, support staff, is staff one. But if you can go back to your presentation, Acting DG, page 15, I think. Page 15, second paragraph, or second bullet point. Not bulletproof, bullet point. It talks about the MOU that was signed. Officials of GCIS providing services for DOC. I understand the MOU, but what does that mean to them? They're employed by GCIS, they work for GCIS, they have specific performance areas in GCIS, but also you, as DOC, you use them. I understand there is MOU, but is it legal? Is there anything that is more they are getting as compensation? Because they are two different departments. Whilst I'm waiting for a response for lunch, because it will be proper to go for lunch before you respond. But seeing that there is no lunch,
we can go ahead until half past one, and then we can go for lunch at half past one. Over to you. It's quite a lot of questions, eh? It's quite a lot of questions. 20 minutes won't be enough, but let us try. Over to you, Minister, and then you can...
Let me start with the simple ones. The officials will answer the difficult ones, the opposite. Thank you, Chair. There was a question that was raised by Honorable Machoba. In fact, you are requesting for a radio station for Google it for us. That's linked with the question that was raised by Honorable Van Dijk on the moratorium. ICASA issued a moratorium with regard to the licensing of community radio stations based on the the scarcity of spectrum, as you have said that. This was issued on 22 September 2015, but it was in respect of an application for Class Community Sound Broadcasting Services, and then that was also application for radio frequency spectrum for the purposes of providing community broadcasting services. This was necessitated basically by the scarcity of the analog radio frequency, as we have indicated. Also that, and then they indicated to us when we further asked based on your question to say they are in the process of developing a new regulatory framework for community broadcasting in 2016-2017. That's the issue financially. That's the issue. Then they will be able to update us as and when they present. But the moratorium does not, however, apply to pending applications that we received before September 2015, and also applications for special event licenses. So that's the issue, Honorable Machoba. And then I will also advise you to take that when MDDA presents, because that item will be dealt with, because also we need to also to look, because you've got Kailicha, that has got the community radio. How do you share that? Like what we've done recently in Esteras and Mamelodi, there is a community radio station that we've launched there. They are sharing that with moms because it wanted to cater for that specific community. So I think that issue of your request will be dealt with, but I think we just need to find each other, yourself and the Kailisha colleagues, so that you see how do you share these scarce resources. Then we'll deal with that one. And then with regard to the issue raised by Honorable Gungoven, the issue of 90%, that's the issue that there is. Maybe let me start up front to say whether SABC was funded 1% by government is governed by the PFMA, Broadcasting Act, Companies Act, and then I have a shareholder contract that I signed with them. The accountability still rests in Parliament. They must come and account in Parliament. So I regret those statements, but the issue is that when it comes to accountability, SABC accounts to this Parliament, and then that is legislated, is in the law. There's no excuse to that effect. And then when you go through the Broadcasting Act in terms of its objectives, as you read it, one of that is that the SABC must contribute to democracy, development of society, gender equality, all those things, nation building, and also provision of education and strengthening the spiritual being of society. The SABC is also required to encourage the development of local content policy. You will recall, as we indicated earlier, we are responsible for outcome 14 together with the Ministry of Arts and Culture. We are responsible for social cohesion, and then in terms of the delivery agreements, we have asked all the entities to tell us how they're going to contribute towards outcome 14. But moreover, the Department of Arts and Culture, if you have seen the recent developments, they've published the government's intention of promoting local content, and there's a policy called a Mzansi Golden. So the SABC also is empowered by the Act, the Broadcasting Act, and this also Mzansi Golden, they are expected to contribute towards that. So we had to, even also our resolutions, of the ruling party resolution, they have emphasized the issue of local content. Hence, on our part, then we have appointed the South African Broadcasting Advisory Council to also deal with that. This is the issue that is ongoing. At the end of the day, we take the point that this definition of local content has to be expanded. This is the work that we've also assigned the Broadcast Advice Council to deal with that. When that is done, we'll also be able to come and share with you so that as we move forward, how do we deal with that? Coming to the issue of funding challenges, it was raised by you, Honorable Talash. I want to thank you that, Honorable Sally as well. I think this is a challenge, and the CFO will elaborate more. Now we are sitting with a situation where she was complaining that she can't do the reconciliation because she needs critical staff in finance. Given the situation, I had to do away my positions in my office, like the advice. I said, I'll do it myself. I'll work. In the meantime, use my money to get that director and at least a clerk so that you're able to do your work. This is the extent of the challenge that you were indicating, but they will deal with that in more detail. But that has been, because even when you see that spreadsheet or how we funded moving forward, there's not enough money, and it defeats what Honorable Talashe was so saying with regard to us to deliver as this mandate. But also coming to the issue of vacancies, we've already conducted interviews for the DG of GCIS. It's in cabinet now. It's going to be processed. That was the most outstanding one. We found it when we came in. And then the other ones, they already did that. But also among those critical positions that are there, apart from the 22 ones, there are those that we've advertised now. When it was time to deal with that for us to fill them, then there's no funding coming from a treasury, but there are engagements that are taking place to that effect. And then also when it comes to vacant positions in our monthly bilaterals, these are the things that we are also checking to see. When it comes to also to board entities, they need to make sure that they must fill those vacancies. But when you talk to treasury at times, they will say it's cost-containing measures. So they've not given us adequate money, but with the legally, we try to do the lot of work that we're expected to do. On the issue of GCIS chairperson and the MOU, we just had to run. That was the only workable solution to deal with these issues, because but the MOU, that's what Treasury requires to do so that we are able to explain our terms of reference. That is a legal document that binds us, and also how we do at times then compensate each other based on the works. That's the other money that we're using for these vacant positions that have not yet filled, so that we're able to compensate GCIS. But that's done in terms of the law. There isn't much that we'll be found wanting on that one, and they are audited as well. And then there was the issue raised by Honorable Madisha when it comes to issue of employing people. Yes, it is easy to employ people, but, you know, you also need to employ people with the right skills, especially that now we assist with this responsibility to implement this project. Out of the staff that were transferred to us from the then old DOC, there were people that were transferred, but there are those that lack requisite skills, because now you also need to deal with the issue of radio frequency spectrum. That capacity is required. That's why you'll find, but we'll endeavor that all the full vacant positions in the current financial year are filled. I think I've given them the end of October, if I'm not mistaken, DG, on that one to say, out of the remaining one, you must fill. The Public Service Commission's target for vacancy rate is about 8%. We acknowledge that, but we are going to make sure that we have the ground running, and then with the limited resources at the same time, we are trying to fill the vacancies. I must also say that GCIS also, the issue that you are raising about Vukuzenzele, the distribution of Vukuzenzele, Honorable Seli, it's underfunded. And if you check now, there's a lot of expectations even from the other departments that we need to assist them with GCIS. And then there is a Comtax report. I think we'll deal with that when we deal with that. Yet to, that has not yet been implemented now. And then that report also put obligation on GCIS to make sure that the overall mother body of government communication as it is, there are certain things that they need to do. But when you read that report, you'll find out that most of the things, they have not yet been implemented. When you check, that's the issue of funding. And we appeal with members to say, I think on this one of funding or of the department, you'll have to assist us to make sure that then we get funding so that we're able to implement on our mandate. The rest of the questions, if I'm not mistaken, are technical. DG and CFO, you can deal with that.
Thank you very much, Minister. Now we're going to break for lunch. And then come back. We'll take...
There is lunch at the desk there.
Finger lunch.